tomorrow's news today.
And it's time for humanity to stand up and say, I don't know what's going to happen at the end of this, but you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
The next chapter in the war for humanity's minds begins now at alexjoneslive.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Sitting in for Alex Jones today, we've got a very big show for you. Of course, the main story is going to be the Memorandum of Understanding, the potential path to peace out of this ill-advised and thoroughly pointless war against Iran we've been waging for the last, 100 days. The Memorandum of Understanding has been signed in Switzerland as part of the G7 summit. And the outrage has commenced. The Israelis are not happy about this. And the Israel First Americans are having trouble keeping their fury under wraps. We'll show you what's actually in the MOU, what this actually means, where we go from here, and the reactions from the likes of, well, people like Benjamin Netanyahu or Ben Shapiro or Mark Levin. We'll be getting into all of it. And a lot of statements from Trump that sound sort of unlike anything he said in the recent past. He's made a lot of statements at the G7, which has a lot of people scratching their heads. How did he about face on so many things so rapidly? Why is he saying things now that we've been saying the entire time but have seemed to escape him up until now? I don't think it's that complicated. I think the economic reality is what's actually dictating the course of the war. All of the rhetoric is pointless, meaningless window dressing. But here's an AP report about the signing of the MOU yesterday in the G7 conference. Let's watch.
Iran and the United States have signed an interim deal over the Iran war. U.S. President Donald Trump signed it in Versailles in France, seated alongside French President Emmanuel Macron at a formal dinner. Meanwhile, in Tehran, the state-run IRNA news agency showed pictures of Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian signing the deal, stone-faced, and later holding it up to a camera with it bearing both his signature and that of Trump's. Now, this deal appears to call for the immediate reopening of the Strait of Hormuz, the narrow mouth of the Persian Gulf through which about a fifth of all oil and natural gas passed before the Iran war began back in February. It also sets in motion a 60-day window for the two countries to negotiate over Iran's nuclear program. This was one of the reasons that Trump, Israel, and others cited for launching the war on Iran. It remains unclear just exactly how they'll bridge the gaps over this. One part of this deal calls for the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, which is a UN agency that is the nuclear watchdog for that world body, to monitor the downblending of the highly enriched uranium in Iran. That would see it go from levels that are very close to weapons grade down to negligible purity. Now, Iran, for its part, has been insisting that it would hold on to its nuclear stockpile. President Trump had said that he wanted to see that stockpile removed, so it remains unclear how they're going to bridge that gap. There's also questions about Iran's nuclear centrifuges and other parts of the program, which remain destroyed after the war and after U.S. bombings that happened last year. All this together just shows how tentative still this peace deal is. It does offer a lot of concessions for Iran, however, including the possibility of a $300 billion fund to help rebuild Iran after the war, should it follow through on its commitments. Meanwhile, there's also questions over whether or not Iran would charge ships for going through the Strait of Hormuz. There's only a narrow window in this accord for ships to move out without being charged.
Well, it's peace, and I like that. Peace preferable to war. That's where I stand. That's my complicated geopolitical take. I like peace and not killing. We'll be back.
Now in the 21st century, it's time to stand up and realize that we should not allow ourselves to be crammed into this rat maze. We should not submit to dehumanization. The 21st century is going to be a new century, not the century of slavery, not
altar of God, eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man.
I want freedom! That's what I want! And that's what you should want!
You're listening to Alex Jones.
The truth is out there in front of you, but they lay out this buffet of lies. I'm sick of it, and I'm not going to take a bite out of it!
AlexJonesLive.com. Tomorrow's news today. Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The Alex Jones Show, AlexJonesLive.com. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. Please do share the links. Let people know we are live. Massive show, mostly unpacking the memorandum of understanding that Donald Trump signed at the G7 summit yesterday between America and Iran, and kind of unwillingly Israel. There's some interesting, overlaps in the alliance that we have here, where we're making agreements claiming that Israel is going to do certain things that they have absolutely no intention of doing. How this is going to unroll and how this is going to work out at the end of the day is still very much up in the air. But I, for one, am very happy that there is now at least a memorandum of understanding, even though in my experience covering or studying armed conflicts overseas, I don't know if I've ever seen a memorandum of understanding being signed. I mean, there are ceasefires, there are peace treaties. A memorandum of understanding is the type of thing that you sign if you're a real estate mogul in New York City and you want first dibs on a building. If it ever were to be sold, then you might sign a memorandum of understanding. It's an interesting sort of thing to happen in this conflict. Everything is a little bit wonky with all of this and has been the entire time. The process by which we got into the war wasn't exactly the appropriate one. The process by which we stayed in the war has also not been appropriate. It's interesting, you know, living in a anarcho-tyranny, which is what we live in, it's interesting to see when laws apply and when they simply don't. You know, there are things like, well, there's a, you know, the president has the ability to wage a limited military engagement up to 60 days, and then at that point, the Congress has to be invoked and actually declare war, or the military engagement has to end, or you can, you know, demand a certain extension. Those 60 days came and went and kind of just kept going. It's kind of like, well, it's the law, but who cares? But we want to keep waging this illegal war, so we're just going to do it. So again, we're sort of in uncharted territories in a variety of different ways here. We've got memorandums of understanding. We've got conflicts that aren't technically wars, but look an awful lot like one. We've got agreements being signed, including countries that aren't actually party to the agreement and don't agree to the agreement itself, but are expected to be held to it. It's all a little bit bizarre, but that's what happens when you are engaged in a, you know, relentless campaign of lies. It's just lies. You know, what is the phrase? What a tangled web we weave when we practice to deceive. So we'll be trying to unweave this tangled web as we try to figure out what the heck is actually happening here. And again, I think part of the confusion, part of the mystery around all of this is that the rhetoric is so inconsequential, sort of meaningless. In other words, things that Donald Trump was saying last week, he's now saying the opposite of. Did he learn something in the intervening time? Probably not. It's just that the rhetoric is completely divorced from the reality on the ground, right? And this is the case with most things around the world. You know, I always say, or like in the political sphere these days, I always say the only thing you need to do to be a conspiracy theorist is recognize that things don't just happen. Well, the other aspect of that is the things that are happening are often completely and basically irrecognizable when discussed in the news. And the key, the skill I would am desperate to impart on the wider American people is understanding that the words are often completely and utterly meaningless, and you just have to look at the actions. So, for example, This memorandum of understanding has now been signed. Donald Trump is making statements, whether it's about Hezbollah or Iran, the ballistic missiles. It's stuff that we've been saying the entire time and that we were called all sorts of names for believing. And yet now Donald Trump is saying it. What has caused this reversal? Did he just learn that Israel is systematically destroying civilian buildings in Beirut, literally as a form of punishment against the Lebanese people for daring to exist where they want to, you know, have their beach houses? I don't think he just learned that. Why is he talking about it now? Well, because the economic reality has shifted and the war has to end. So now he's going to say what is necessary for the war to end, or he's going to actually give credence to the claims that have been true the entire time, but have been ignored or, you know, debunked the entire time because they didn't want them to be true. So much of what it goes on across the country or across the world, it's like you've got the real reason why it's happening, and then you've got the stated reason. You can ignore the stated reason. For the most part, you can ignore the stated reason. Now, we're going to look at some of the reasons stated yesterday at the G7 summit and sort of in the surrounding environs of Donald Trump going around making speeches and statements to people. I mean, we'll be looking at it. You can glean information from it, you know, not necessarily believing what they say, but looking at it and going, oh, why are they admitting this now when it's been true the entire time? What can we learn from that admission? Not necessarily from the information provided, but from the fact that they're now letting you have access to that information. But the rhetoric, you have to understand, is largely meaningless. It doesn't reflect anything. So the economic reality on the ground, as we discussed yesterday and I discussed a month or more ago, is that there was always a deadline to this conflict. Mid-June was always the final cutoff date that this conflict, this standoff could be carried on, the Strait of Hormuz could be closed for a certain period of time until the economic outcome became catastrophic. And about a month ago, Goldman Sachs and others came out with reports, and in this case, it had to do with basically European fuel supply, and that if the strait wasn't open and the European fuel supply lines weren't, you know, actually running again by mid-June, then you would have had this cascading domino effect of airlines having to cancel flights, losing money, having to beg the government to bail them out. It would have gotten really bad. And so like a month ago, Goldman Sachs, and again, the reason you can trust these types of, you know, projections into the future is because the people making them are putting their money where their mouth is, right? The Goldman Sachs projection saying that mid-June would be the final time that the strait could stay closed, they were like making purchases and buying stocks, making bets on that assumption. And that's a real thing. I mean, they would really lose money if the war didn't end. And so you can take that and you can go, okay, I don't even care what they're saying. The reality is they're going to lose a bunch of money and the world economy is going to really start to stumble if they don't get this ended, at least paused for a substantial period around mid-June. And so that's what you make your predictions on. That's what you actually listen to and pay attention to, because, again, the rhetoric can be utterly meaningless when there's money on the table, when there's cash that could be lost by these people. Then you know that they're serious about what they're saying. So, again, we're going to go to a lot of videos of Donald Trump making some statements. It's very nice to hear him making. It's very long overdue, personally, in my opinion, some of these statements. We'll begin with clip 29 here. Again, all of these are surrounding the G7 conference at which Donald Trump signed this memorandum of understanding. We have the actual text of the memorandum of understanding we can go through, and we can try to determine why. Why is it that the Israelis and the Israel First Americans are so undone? They're so furious about the prospect of peace, because they haven't gotten what they want yet. And they might have to wait a little longer, and they just don't want to. And again, this is the thing to understand. From a bird's eye point of view, everything that has occurred up until this point has been in service of Israel's ability to slaughter their neighbors with impunity. And look, I don't care what you think about Israel. I don't care what you think about their neighbors. We don't engage in the false dichotomy that says you either support Israel or you are an extremist Muslim. These types of claims are absurd, and we won't be responding to them in any meaningful way because they are just that pointless. But looking at it factually, the demand that has been made by whether it's Hezbollah or Iran or just anti-Israel activists here in America, it's been, you've got to stop killing everyone. You've got to stop murdering everyone in Gaza. You've got to stop saturation bombing civilian neighborhoods. This is unnecessary. It's brutal. It's horrific. It makes the Holocaust look like a walk in the park when you're setting up, you know, you're starving people because you completely control ingress or egress of everything into that area and you cut off their food supply. So you have people starving, some of them to death. Then you offer them food. And then when they rush to you to get the food that you're offering them, you kill them like a mousetrap snapping on a mouse that wanted cheese. It's, again, just beyond inhumane. It's brutal and horrific, and it's been happening right in front of everybody the entire time. And that's all they had to do was just stop doing that. Just stop murdering civilians in Lebanon. Stop trying to take over Gaza by killing everyone there and sending all the Palestinians to our neighborhoods. Thank you very much. Stop murdering everyone. That's all that you ever had to do. And that is too much. That's too much. That is beyond the pale. How dare you even suggest we stop killing everyone? You're an anti-Semite. That has essentially been the situation this entire time. So all of the, like the war with Iran, the hundreds of billions of dollars we've spent, the bases that have been obliterated by their missiles, the reputation overseas that America has sacrificed on this altar, it has all been in service of Israel's ability to kill whoever they want and not suffer any backlash whatsoever. That is the purpose of all of it. Tell me I'm not telling you the truth. Tell me I'm lying. Tell me that there's anything else. I mean, you can frame it as Israel's safety, but that's never really been, you know, at major risk. You had October 7th, which was obviously a form of false flag attack in which the attack was allowed to happen. It was made worse on purpose. It was lied about significantly with claims of beheaded babies and all these other stuff that was basically immediately disproved, but nevertheless is repeated like a mantra to this day by the people in power trying to convince you that Israel killing everybody is somehow a necessary step, a necessary response to an existential crisis. It never was, and it isn't now. And yet the rhetoric hasn't changed coming from them. It's as if they're not, you know, bombing apartment buildings in Beirut, then, you know, the gas chambers will be fired up again. If they're not slaughtering hundreds of innocent people all around the Republic of Lebanon, then, you know, Israel's going to be destroyed. It's a ridiculous claim, but that is sort of the mindset that they're constantly operating on. So remember, that's the bird's eye view here, is all of this, everything that we've been engaged in the last 2 years has been in service of Israel's ability to wage war without ceasing, without purpose, without mercy against anybody they want, whenever they want. That's the ultimate goal. That's what they want. That's what they demand. That's what the war in Iran is about. It was never a valid excuse to do any of this, and yet they're very pissed that they are going to have to possibly, for a period of time, stop killing Lebanese people. They're very mad that that's a possibility. Here's Donald Trump talking about this fact.
Israel's fighting Hezbollah too long, and too many people are being killed. And you don't have to knock down an apartment house every time you're looking for somebody. Because there are a lot of people in those apartment houses, and they're not all Hezbollah, that I can tell you. And I suggested to Israel to let Syria take care of Hezbollah. Because to be honest with you, I think they'd do a better job of doing it. And I didn't like Syria. I didn't like where 2 hours before we're signing the agreement that there was an attack in Lebanon, in Beirut. It wasn't like in the southern side, and you know, it was in Beirut. I did not like that. I let them know that. I didn't like it, not at all. But I think that Syria, you know, he's pulled that country together amazingly quickly. He's very capable, and he's been very good for me. He's protected everything that I've asked for. He's done. And if Israel can't do the job without killing everyone else, he'll do the job. Syria will do the job.
Syria will do the job. That's, of course, Al Jolani, the head chopper in chief, the former ISIS commander who was placed at the head of a Sunni, orc mob, basically a horde, a savage horde that swept across Syria. Of course, people don't understand about that is that they had very sophisticated help, not only by Israeli and American air forces softening the targets, but also by a mysterious app that they convinced everybody in the Syrian army to download on their phones, which gave somebody access to all of their communications, and they were able to completely cripple the response while al-Jolani's horde swept in and took over Syria. And now they're saying that this ISIS commander, former ISIS commander, current president of Syria, he should be the one to sweep down from the north and take out Hezbollah, because basically you can't do that. You can't take out Hezbollah without sending troops on the ground in to fight Hezbollah. And when Israel does that, they all get killed. America is not interested in doing that. Maybe we'll use our puppets in Syria. And he's like, you know, Jolani is, you know, cobbled together the Syrian state so quickly. It's so stable now. It's like, yeah, it's kind of easy to have a stable state when the most powerful countries in the world aren't psychopathically trying desperately to destroy your country by inventing ISIS and waging a soft war and starting a civil war in your country and diplomatically trying to destroy you constantly. Yeah, it turns out a country can be functional if it's not constantly under attack from all of its neighbors. It's, but no, maybe Jolani is just super skilled. His talents were being wasted when he was simply chopping people's heads off. He should have been put in a suit. It's just incredible. And I, you know, again, not to pat myself on the back, but to reemphasize that the Alex Jones Network, we are so far ahead on everything. Who else has talked endlessly since the very beginning of the conflict about the overwhelming influence of Hezbollah? For a long time, you like hardly heard about it. I mean, I would make videos over and over again being like, why is nobody talking about Hezbollah? That's the real thing that's happening here. The real point of all of this, so much of this, is to destroy Hezbollah. And if you take that point of view and you look at it from that perspective, everything does make a lot more sense in terms of why was ISIS created? Well, it happened to crop up right after Israel failed to take out Hezbollah in 2006. So it's like, again, we're seeing almost the same thing that happened two decades ago happen again, where Israel tries to invade Lebanon. It doesn't work. And so the American powers say, well, why don't we use an ISIS horde to try to take out Hezbollah from the north? We've seen this one before. We've been through this before. And of course, it's interesting the way Donald Trump phrased that statement was almost like he thinks that Israel bombing civilian apartment buildings in Beirut is an effort to actually destroy Hezbollah, but it's not. This is a method of, it's a strategy of severity, a doctrine of severity, one might say. It is a terroristic strategy. And essentially what they've come out and said is that, like, the officials in Israel have said, every drone that Hezbollah shoots at us, we are going to destroy 10 buildings. And I'm not sure if they ever actually went through with that threat, but at least one building has been destroyed for every drone that got hit. So again, this isn't like they have to destroy the buildings. They don't even necessarily think any Hezbollah people are in the buildings. It's a doctrine of severity. It's a terrorist tactic where they want the people of Lebanon to turn on Hezbollah, because every time Hezbollah attacks Israel, Israel bombs a civilian apartment building. So it's not like an accident. It's not like in, you know, Gaza, where ostensibly, you know, and they had official sort of matrix that they would run. They had algorithms that they would run where they would assign a certain number of civilians that were worth killing in order to kill one Hamas member. So if they had a single Hamas soldier, I think on average, they would say they could kill 15 civilians. And that was worth it if, as long as they got that one Hamas member. Of course, insane, totally just contrary to everything we believe here in the West. A lot of people have nothing to do with Hezbollah, have lost their lives. Yeah, no, Israel is literally, I mean, Israel blew up a crusader castle in Lebanon. There's a castle that was built by the king of Israel, the crusader king, Beaufort. They destroyed it. They took it over and then they blew it up. They occupied it when they blew it up. What do you think the strategic purpose of blowing up a historic Christian site that dates back from the Crusades could possibly be, other than just ruthless eradication of all cultures that exist there so they can all be wiped away and replaced, or as the Israelis put it in their own words, Judaized, right? Let's go to clip number 15. Israeli politicians, including Itamar Ben-Gvir and Bezalel Smotrich, have criticized the U.S. and Israel deal. Let's watch. He says the state of Israel must not accept the ceasefire between the United States and Iran. We must act with clear and uncompromising conscience. The security of the citizens of the state of Israel is above all else. A sovereign state is not a contractor for any superpower. It is not bound by agreements that block its ability to protect its people. We must continue, he says, to demolish the houses in southern Lebanon. We must continue to push back the residents of southern Lebanon. We must continue to eliminate Hezbollah terrorists in Lebanon. We love President Trump, but we do not accept the agreement he signed. And we must continue on our path. Here's Smotrich. He says the agreement with Iran is bad, is an bad agreement for Israel and the entire free world. Iran must not have nuclear weapons. We must not accept a reality in which the extremist regime in Tehran is continued to advance towards its goal. Yair Golan, with a stroke of a pen, the tremendous military achievements of our pilots in the skies of Iran and the heroism of our fighters on Lebanese soil were erased. All this while Netanyahu simply stands by as a criminal defendant indicted, as a weak, ill, as isolated and ineffective person. Oh boy, not going well for old Benjamin Netanyahu. Donald Trump is turning on him as well. We've got headlines. Netanyahu finally learns the truth about Donald Trump, inside Trump and Netanyahu's complicated relationship. We're going to try to untangle all of this because it is very tangled. It is like we have a peace deal, essentially, but it's not a peace deal. It's a memorandum of understanding. And J.D. Vance is to be celebrated for this. He's going around and, you know, talking about the success that we've had bringing about this memorandum of understanding, ending the threat to the economy and human lives that this war has represented. And yet, all these headlines are like, Rubio lets Vance take the fall as Iran deal questions mount. He's being blamed for it. He's being blamed for the peace. He's being blamed for the understanding. And the folks and the likes of Marco Rubio, and of course all of the former convicted terrorists that now run the Israeli government, they're very not happy about any of this because they have one priority. They have one thing they actually care about. That is, once again, the ability for Israel to kill any and all of its neighbors whenever it wants without suffering any repercussions. And anything short of that is an outrage. And boy, are they outraged. We will show you their outrage and we'll laugh at it on the other side. Stay with us, folks. This is a great thing if it sticks. Now, whether it sticks, that's a whole nother question we'll get into as well. Stay with us.
There's three big announcements right now. We have the 250th birthday limited edition run of awesome designs for this July 4th, 2026 coming up. And they're now available to ship to you as of today, Monday, June 15th, 2026. And they'll be available only through July. They're limited edition. And then that's it. And they fundraise for the broadcast. But I got to say, I'm very impressed with the designs that Bigley came up with. I was heavily involved in this, in the concepts, like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition with the rattlesnake and the AR-15, Liberty or Death, 1776 to 2026. That is a really nice shirt. I designed this one. Very simple. America 250 Years Strong. And these are just very clean, Americana, high-quality fabric, very comfortable. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. I did that concept. These are very, very clean. I'm proud of these. I think these are shirts everybody would want to wear. I would certainly want to wear these. America, ride fast, live free. Just a classic Betsy Ross flag. 1776 free. They came up with that. I think that's pretty cool. Defund the deep state. That's pretty cool. I like that really clean one right there. 1776, 250 years of freedom. They designed that. Very clean, very nice. So you want nice, clean, patriotic apparel that, you know, won't get you stabbed by a liberal, but other patriots will know who you are. You can, you know, promote liberty and kind of identify who you are. It's fun to wear these shirts, I can tell you that right now. You kind of choose your own adventure. You wear an Alex Jones shirt, then you really got to meet a lot of cool people, but you also might get a bottle smashed over your head. Hundreds and hundreds of great designs from the Gulf of America to you name it. That's a good-looking shirt right there at thealexjonesstore.com. New America's 250th birthday, limited edition, July 4th. Apparel now available. And right now, introductory, they're 30% off all apparel on the site, not just the American 250th birthday limited editions. It's only available for a month and a half. These designs are limited edition. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And we only sell you stuff that really empowers you, because we want you to love it and be impressed with it, so we have a relationship with you. And so the only way you miss out is not getting our T3, our bovine colostrum, our ultramethylene red, our Shilajit, our Irish sea moss. They're all amazing. But if you do anything, methylene blue and the water filtration system, when you take this out of the box, I've never seen, I went and checked, it's the highest stainless steel there is. And it turned out it wasn't that much more. I mean, it was somewhat more, another 30% more to have this. But, I mean, it's just standalone. Nobody's got anything even close to this. I congratulations, Bigley. I am very impressed. Very, very impressed. I know a winner when I see it. And this sexy beast is going to help so many people cut out all the garbage out of their water. One of the biggest things you can do, take control of your life. And it's going to fund this operation. So I am literally in love with this. It looks like Marilyn Monroe to me right now. I forget the term when you're attracted to, like, sports cars and objects. I've never been sexually attracted to, like, a sports car, though I thought they're cool. Never been sexually attracted to... I'm actually being a little sarcastic, but I'm not. I'm actually physically attracted to this right now, okay? This is... because I know it's going to help people. I'm being silly. Actually, kind of not. What sexy is it's great. I know a home run when I see it, and I know this is just another big victory, so thank you so much for all you and your support, and Bigley knocking it out of the park.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
The answer to 1984 is 1776. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Does anybody really know the secret? Or the combination for this life and where to keep it? It's kind of sad when you don't.
Welcome back, folks. This is Harrison Smith sitting in for Alex Jones today. Folks, you got to share the link, alexjoneslive.com. Make sure you download the app if you can. Again, I told the story yesterday that we were in Colorado and met some family friends, and they were lamenting the fact that Alex Jones is no longer on the air. We were like, what? No, we are. We are still on the air. You've got to tell people. You've got to tell your friends. Our strongest soldiers are out there, cut off from communications. We have to reestablish comm lines. How do we do that? You know, if we have time today, I would love to take calls, not just on the reaction to the memorandum of understanding between Iran and America, the end of this conflict and how everybody's reacting to it, but also about how we can recall our lost sheep, reform the flock. Because again, you'd think we've said it enough, alexjoneslive.com, but hey, people don't know and it's not their fault. I understand. It happens to me all the time. There will be people I watch like constantly and then something happens, their channel gets deleted and I straight up like forget they exist. It's just something that happens, you know, people get in habits and if it's not where they previously found it, it doesn't exist to them anymore. Out of sight, out of mind. Tell your friends, and you can get Alex to the Alex Jones app as well, alexjonesapp.com. And, you know, especially you young people, the Zoomers listening to me, go help your grandparents. I literally, when I was in Colorado, was like installing the app on my grandmother's phone, doing the shortcut to the Rumble channel so she could always find the live stream. again, it's just, hey, technology's moving. We're moving with it, and we got to make sure to pull everybody along with us. And of course, you can support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. We have incredible products there. I've been, and I'm kind of a sucker for all of the products that we have at thealexjonesstore.com because they're all awesome. And it's like, it's not a thing I'm getting paid to do, right? Like I could always carry around my old wallet, but I got the new wallet because it's so awesome and I've been so happy with it the entire time. Now we have these premium nylon tactical belts available at thealexjonesstore.com. They're only $39.99 and they are of equivalent design, quality, standards, aesthetics, just amazing stuff. You will never be disappointed with the quality of items at thealexjonesstore.com, whether it's the supplements or the gear like this. It's always top notch, just like we try to keep our coverage always top notch. Might be an ironic thing to say for a belt that has no notches. It is a heavy-duty nylon webbing with smooth automatic ratchet buckle, so there's no holes, no notches, no guessing, no too tight or too loose. You just adjust it to exactly where you want it, and it stays there. You get a perfect micro-adjustable fit, whether you're out working, carrying, driving, sitting at your desk, or on the move. We've got three unique designs, the Cross Edition, the 1776 Edition, and the Alex Jones Signature Edition. You can get each one of these for under $40, but for a limited time, you can get all three designs bundled together for only $99. If you want my advice, they make fantastic gifts. So if you want one, go ahead and get all three and then give your least favorite two out as gifts, or heck, buy six and give three of them out as gifts. And of course, the America 250 birthday limited edition 4th of July apparel sale is on. And folks, 4th of July is coming up quick. You're not going to want to be out there wearing like a purple shirt, right? You're going to want to be decked out head to toe in the most patriotic gear you can find. And the best place to get it hands down is thealexjonesstore.com. This collection right now is 30% off. So again, you're running out of time to get this before July 4th. So it's delivered and you can wear it with pride on Independence Day coming up very, very quickly. Go now, thealexjonesstore.com. Check out the America 250 limited edition 4th of July apparel collection. It's 30% off. Right now, we also have gravity-fed water filter systems back in stock because we are, at the end of the day, but humble water filter salesmen here trying to both provide it, because it's always the way we've been. You've got to not just combat this stuff at the political level. You've got to protect yourself in the meantime. In other words, they put chemicals in the water. We want to be activists, we want to be protesters, we want to be running for office to get that changed, to get the stuff removed from the water. In the meantime, filter your water. It goes like that. Destroying Tyranny Since 1776, Betsy Ross snake t-shirt. It's like, how many banned logos can you put on a single shirt? How many logos that would get you kicked out of the U.S. military or investigated by the FBI can we put on a shirt? Because believe it or not, that is the state of freedom of this in this country, at least a few years ago. If you remember, there was a serial, like a list of symbols that had been banned by the U.S. Army for, you know, extremist ties. And one of them was the Gadsden flag. One of them was the Betsy Ross flag. You know, say what you want about, and I do, about Donald Trump's ill-advised excursion into Iran and willingness to capitulate to the state of Israel. At the end of the day, his election in 2024 especially, was a rebuke of the suicidal wokeness that we'd been saddled with up until that point. And I like to think that that was sort of the high tide point of the anti-American sentiment in this country, when you had people in official positions of power labeling the Gadsden flag as extremist. I think it's good we all recognized it's gone a little too far, and the election of Donald Trump and the domination of sort of the conservative cultural impetus has started to roll that back, and hopefully we see that process continue. And you can help that process continue by wearing these symbols unapologetically and reminding people of what they're really all about, because it's not that complicated. They want to associate freedom itself with something despicable and hated, whether it's white supremacy or whatever else. It's not that complicated. They go, white supremacy is the ultimate evil. The founding fathers were white supremacists. The founding fathers gave us our constitution. Therefore, the constitution must be evil. I guess we have to get rid of our freedoms. I guess we have to stop listening to the people that talked so eloquently about human freedom and the rights given to us by God. We've got to discredit those to remove the rights themselves. So just understand their program in order to combat it. Embrace freedom and our symbols and our history unapologetically, proudly, and by going to the alexjonesstore.com. Now with that, J.D. Vance just got done with a press conference about the Memorandum of Understanding signed between America and Iran. And he's made, again, some pretty controversial statements, if that's the way you want to put it. True would be another way, controversial slash true. One of these statements that everybody knows is accurate, but boy, do people get mad if you actually say it. Let's go first to this Nick Sartor clip. This was posted by Nick Sartor minutes ago. J.D. Vance directly calling out Israeli cabinet members for their personal attacks on President Trump. Here's Vice President J.D. Vance at the White House earlier today.
The Israelis, just like everybody else, have to respect this peace process that is fundamentally good for them and good for the entire region. What the president has grown frustrated sometimes is that we seem to be right on the cusp of a major breakthrough in the agreement, and then all of a sudden there's a major explosion that goes off in a civilian population center in Beirut, and a lot of people who have nothing to do with Hezbollah lose their lives. That's not acceptable. That's the sort of thing that we've asked for closer coordination so that we ensure it doesn't happen. And our message to the Israelis, just as our message to everybody else, is fundamentally, we want this peace process to be good for you. We do not want Hezbollah attacking Israel, but in order to ensure that that happens, we have got to actually build the kind of regional framework that can cut off the money to Hezbollah, cut off Iranian support for Hezbollah, and also ensure that Lebanon's territorial sovereignty is respected by all parties.
So a couple of interesting things about that statement. Obviously, it's not something that we've heard out of the American administration recently, even though we've all expressed this frustration since it's been obvious to everybody the entire time. And there have been, you know, occasions where Donald Trump has expressed outrage, calling Axios and saying, you know, BB has no judgment because of the bombing of Lebanon. I don't want to be too nitpicky here. Maybe I should just accept. Maybe I should just be happy that J.D. Vance is expressing this. Maybe I shouldn't nitpick it at all. I just have a little thing about, What is the word? Basically, I can't think of the grammatical phrase right now. Passive language. That's what it is. It just came to me. The passive language. You know, explosions went off in Beirut. Really? They went off, did they? The way I would phrase that was Israel bombed a civilian population, right? There's a subject. There's an action. They did a thing. The thing didn't just occur all of a sudden. So, but I'm nitpicking, okay? Yes, explosions did go off in Beirut, and that's a bad thing. But then he says, you know, we need closer coordination to ensure that doesn't happen. Again, I'm happy that he's saying this, but was it a lack of close coordinate? Was this an accident? Was this not the exact thing Israel intended to do? Because if we really want this conflict to end, if we really don't want to be dragged into yet another forever war, which this very easily could have been. I mean, hell, look at Ukraine and Russia. That thing should have been over 3 years ago. It's getting worse daily. Today, this giant attack by Ukraine against Russia just promises a greater escalation into the future. It's another story we'll try to get to later today. But this thing could have gone on forever. And thank goodness that, you know, J.D. Vance and Donald Trump seem not to be willing to carry this forward like that. And I'm happy that J.D. Vance is saying this. But again, it's not coordination. If we actually want to get out of this conflict, the first thing we have to do is recognize that Israel is deliberately destroying our ability to create peace. It's not a lack of coordination. It's not a miscommunication. It's not a like, well, what the heck? Israel's bombing Lebanon. Israel's like, yeah, I'm bombing Lebanon. What's the problem with that? It's like, we just signed a deal of understanding. It's like, ah, dang it. I didn't know. You should have let me know. Look, call me. Okay. Call me next time. Tell me you're signing. Tell me you're in an agreement and then I won't bomb Lebanon. Like, do you really think this is a sitcom style miscommunication happening here? People are just missing calls and bombing countries on accident? Or is it every single time that we get anywhere close to a peace agreement with Israel, with Iran, Israel bombs Lebanon or previously bombed the negotiators we were negotiating with? it's not an accident. So again, I'm not to nitpick J.D. Vance. I am very glad that he's saying this, but it's like there's still this poison pill of the assumption that somehow Israel and America are on the same side and that we're a team and that when Israel does something that screws up our plans, it must be a miscommunication. We've really got to get that, what do you say, we've really got to get our coordination closer to figure out how to not have this happen again. The way you have this not happen again is by punishing Israel for doing it, is by restricting Israel's actions because we're the larger partner and have the ability to do that. We just don't have the will for some reason. This is what Joe Kent resigned his position over. This is what we've been saying the entire time. If we actually want to get out of this conflict, we have to consciously recognize and acknowledge the fact that Israel is deliberately keeping us in it by carrying out these terrorist attacks against Lebanese civilians, specifically to destroy the ability of us to have an agreement with Iran. So again, it's a small thing, but the fact that they would even say, like, we need closer coordination to figure this out, it's just like, then we're going to be stuck in this forever. Because the first thing you have to recognize is that it's absolutely on purpose. It's by design. And it's because Israel doesn't care what's best for us. They care what's best for them. And they want us to do whatever they want us to do for them. I mean, it's not that complicated. So, and again, more people are recognizing and talking about this. We'll show you clips from the likes of Tucker Carlson later. But let's go to this next clip of J.D. Vance directly calling out the Israeli cabinet members for their attacks on Donald Trump. Let's watch.
Now, I saw the Axios report, that Netanyahu is fuming. That's not reflective of the conversations that I've had with him, but maybe he's saying something to somebody else that he's not saying to me. What I will say, and this does bother me, is that you've seen people within Bibi's cabinet who have come out and attacked the deal, and in some ways, very personally, attacked the President of the United States. And I guess my message to them would be twofold. Number one, Donald J. Trump is the only head of state in the entire world who is sympathetic to the nation of Israel at this moment in time. And he happens to be the head of state
superpower. That's huge. Hold on. Holy cow. J.D. Vance just told Israel, let me remind you that Donald Trump is the only head of state in the world right now that's on your side. And you want to turn against him? You want to criticize him? You want to make enemies of him? He's the only one that's on your side right now. Is that really a decision you want to make? That is a very powerful rebuke from the Vice President of the United States, and it's absolutely correct. I'm sorry, I wasn't expecting that. That is a crazy and accurate statement to make, that at this point, Donald Trump is literally the only head of state in the world that is actually still on Israel's side, and he shouldn't be. And it doesn't make any sense why he is, quite frankly. But you can see the way, and we'll show you more clips. I mean, we showed you clips in the last segment. Bezalel Smotrich, Ben-Gvir, both men who, by the way, I'm not even exaggerating. They were both either tried, accused, and I believe one of them convicted of literal terrorist attacks when they were younger. Like, these are actual Jewish extremist supremacist terrorists that feel as though Donald Trump and all of America are at their beck and call, and that the inability of us to sacrifice literally anything for them is somehow an attack. Can we cut these people off already? Like, what do we do? We don't need them. What are we doing? We're the only ones in the world that still like them. Why though? But why? Why are we still partners with them? It's one of those things, you know, if your friend thinks everybody else is a jackass, guess who's the jackass, right? That was a very interesting statement from J.D. Vance. Let's back it up about 10 seconds and start over from there, because J.D. Vance just reminded the Israelis, who are very, very mad at Donald Trump, and again, we'll show you some clips and articles just about how angry they are at Donald Trump, even though Donald Trump has sacrificed certainly his own political coalition, sacrificed possibly the power of the Republican Party for the next decade, sacrificed dozens of lives of American soldiers, sacrificed hundreds of billions of dollars for them. And the minute that you're not willing to go the next step, you're an anti-Semite. You must be destroyed. It's an extremist mindset that is truly poisonous. Sorry to interrupt, Vice President. Here's J.D. Vance continuing to tell the Israelis what they should really know already. Let's watch.
The President of the United States. And I guess my message to them would be twofold. Number one, Donald J. Trump is the only head of state in the entire world who is sympathetic to the nation of Israel at this moment in time. And he happens to be the head of state of the world superpower. If I was in the cabinet of the Israeli government, I might not be attacking the only powerful ally that I have anywhere left in the entire world. And the second message I would give to some of those cabinet members, Bibi, to his credit, has not gone down this path, but to some of these cabinet members in Israel who are attacking the President of the United States, the other thing that I would say is that over the last 3 months, two-thirds of the defensive weapons that have protected your homeland have been built by American hands and paid for by American tax dollars. The problem for Israel is not Donald J. Trump. And anybody in Israel who thinks their biggest problem is the President of the United States needs to wake up and smell the reality of the situation that country is in. Thank you all.
Well, that was a very powerful, very unexpected statement from J.D. Vance, and a very true one as well. Now, I know of all the suspicions about J.D. Vance concerning his rise, his association with the likes of Peter Thiel and others, and you know, obviously the suspicious side of me would be saying, well, this is, you know, J.D. Vance sort of recognizing the unpopularity of Israel. And while he may have been actually more in favor of the war in Iran than otherwise, he now recognizes the political winds are blowing against him and is staking that position, knowing that, you know, it's good for his political future. That would be the cynical view of this. But you know what? At least he's saying it. At least it's true. And it's the Vice President of the United States saying what we're all thinking. So I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. I'm going to appreciate the fact that that's being said, especially when the, again, activity of Israel. I mean, when he's talking about the interceptor missiles, two-thirds of which at least are, as he put it, made by American hands and purchased with American tax dollars. That's also true of the white phosphorus they're dropping on civilians in Lebanon. It's also true of the bombs that they used to completely demolish the open-air prison state of Gaza. And we can go to things like clip number 5 here. Go ahead and roll this as background. This is before and after satellite imagery of 8 towns in Gaza that were utterly erased by Israel over the last couple of years. So again, we all witnessed the genocide. We all went, and you can look at this and say, well, they deserve it because they attacked Israel once. Okay. I mean, if that's the stance you want to take, I guess you're kind of like a demon type of person. I guess that's just, how you are. I personally think this is insane. I personally, I think this is not just an act of unbelievable human destruction and cruelty and malice and vicious brutality, but also strategically retarded. Because guess what? Hamas isn't even defeated yet, you idiots. Hey, guess what? You did all of this and Hamas is not even disarmed. Like, was it worth it? Was it worth it? Because this is the sacrifice of Israel's not just popularity overseas, but the popularity overseas that gets them the foreign aid they need to survive. So they've sacrificed their future existence on the bet that they would be able to carry this to the end, to destroy Iran and have nobody in the region capable of responding in any way when they wanted to do that to any of their neighbors. Because those videos you just saw, you can't kill your way out of solving problems. Israel's like, what? We what? What the hell are you talking about, sir? It's worked up to this point. It's worked up to this point. Because what I just showed you is the satellite imagery of 8 villages in Gaza being utterly eviscerated, destroyed, removed from the earth. But of course, we can go to clip number 12 here, because this is Lebanon, because they're doing the same thing in Lebanon. Lebanon didn't attack on October 7th. Lebanon didn't do anything to anybody. Lebanon is a pluralistic nation, a republic in which Christians always are guaranteed a position at the head of the political world. And yet for our radio listeners, our television viewers right now are seeing the endless hills of rubble that the southern part of Lebanon have been reduced to as a consequence of Israel's saturation bombing campaign, just like they carried out in Gaza, because it wasn't about, well, the terrorists better not do that. You know, people call Hezbollah a terrorist organization. It is a non-state actor. It is a civilian militia. But they spend most of their time doing things like taking out Israeli drones and hitting Israeli tanks, which last time I checked, isn't technically terrorism. It's just defending yourself from a military attack. I know, these definitions are going to get me in trouble one day, but I have this thing where I have to tell the truth. Darn it. Darn it, I just have to. And by the way, Israel has absolutely no intentions of stopping their onslaught of Lebanon. In fact, they are producing new maps showing just how much of that independent country they are conquering. Israel's military published a map on Thursday showing an expanded zone of control for its troops in southern Lebanon, as Israeli officials told Israel, told Reuters Israel was holding talks with the U.S. over continuing the deployment. An interim pact signed on Wednesday to end the U.S.-Israeli war with Iran calls for an end on fighting on all fronts, including Lebanon, and for parties to ensure the territorial integrity and sovereignty of Lebanon. And so, of course, in response, Israel officially destroys the territorial integrity of Lebanon. Israel has rejected calls to withdraw troops from southern Lebanon, which it invaded in March in response to rocket fire by the Iran-backed Hezbollah militia. Israeli attacks on the destruction of villages have killed thousands and set off a displacement crisis. Hezbollah has continued to launch attacks on Israeli positions in the south this week, including with explosive drones that have killed and injured troops. Two Israeli officials, including senior officials close to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, say Israel was holding talks with the U.S. over maintaining its troop deployment in southern Lebanon. The senior official described those talks as, quote, stubborn. Let's go now to clip number 13 here. Israel is destroying one of the oldest cities in the world, Tyre, Lebanon, as they continue to bomb civilian population centers in, you know, abject betrayal of Trump's demands. I think it's time to cut them off. I think we should do what Joe Kent said and restrain them once and for all.
Hi, folks. Doc Bigley here. And today we're going to get to know our H2O. Billy, what kind of water do you drink?
Why, tap water, of course. Ma says it keeps my teeth sparkly white.
I'm sorry to say it, Billy, but your mother is either plain ignorant or worse, a communist. Let me explain.
Tap water used to be safe to drink, but communist subversives in our government introduced fluoride into our nation's tap under the guise of dental health, when in reality, fluoride lowers your IQ, calcifies your pineal gland, and makes you susceptible to anti-capitalist mind viruses.
So you're telling me I'm a sap if I drink tap?
Yes, you are, Billy. Yes, you are. But don't despair. We found a solution. Follow me. I'd like to tell you a tale of two frogs. Frog number one has only ever drank unfiltered tap water, chock full of fluoride. Observe him listening to satanic music, abusing substances, and engaging in other perversions.
Look, Doc, they're trying to play leapfrog. They're pretty bad at it, though.
Avert your eyes, Billy. Let's continue.
Meanwhile, frog number two has only ever drank water that has been filtered for fluoride and other impurities. What a happy frog family.
Spill the secret, Doc. How do you get rid of the communist poisons?
With the new water filter system from the AlexJonesStore.com.
Say, Doc, may I have a glass?
Why, certainly. Well, that's just swell. No water in the water filter. Listen, I'm not mad at the crew, but I asked for real water in here 30 minutes ago and never got it.
Crew's in trouble again.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
You've got it. All right, you're on go. You've got it.
folks. Second hour is on. The Alex Jones Show is live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this June 18th, 2026. We have another, as the crew put it, big juicy clip of J.D. Vance smacking down the conceit of the Israelis. And I want to play a clip that I played earlier, but this is what J.D. Vance is responding to. So first, here's Bezalel Smotrin. I'm telling you, every time I say their names, I'm worrying I'm accidentally summoning something. Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir, here's what they had to say about, you know, the potential of peace with Iran. And then we'll see J.D. Vance's response to their statements. First, the Israeli politicians. Let's watch.
So
we must not accept the ceasefire between the United States and Iran. We must act with a clear and uncompromising conscience. The security of the citizens of the state of Israel is above all else. A sovereign state is not a contractor for any superpower. It is not bound by agreements that block its ability to protect its people. We must continue to demolish the houses in southern Lebanon. We must continue to push back the residents of southern Lebanon. We must continue to eliminate Hezbollah terrorists in Lebanon. We love President Trump, but we do not accept the agreement he signed. We must continue on our path. Smotrich, the agreement with Iran, the bad agreement for Israel and for the entire free world, is a bad agreement. Iran must not have nuclear weapons. We must accept a reality in which the extremist regime in Tehran continues to advance towards this goal. Golan says, with the stroke of a pen, the tremendous military achievements of our pilots in the skies of Iran and the heroism of our fighters on Lebanese soil were erased. All this while Netanyahu simply stands by as a criminal defendant, indicted as weak, ill, as an isolated and ineffective person. I'm just trying not to laugh that whole time, knowing how J.D. Vance respond to it. Here's J.D. Vance.
But, yeah, you've seen people in their system, Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, who've attacked the deal. And I guess my response to them would be, what is your exact proposal? And, you know, you're a country of 9 million people. You can't just kill your way out of solving every single national security problem that you have. Look at what...
Are you sure? But are you sure, though? I mean, there are just so many more people to kill. I mean, let's kill them first, and if it doesn't work, we'll try something else. Okay? I just love that, because... So his response is, you can't just kill your way out of problems. Then you play the video of Smotrich, and he's just like, We must destroy all of the houses. And you just want, hey, you got to stop killing people. You got to stop trying to kill everyone first and foremost. Okay. That's not a plan. That's the mind of a serial killer. Okay. It's not actually a geopolitical strategy. It's like a madness. You're sort of experiencing a fugue state of murder, and we need to snap you out of it desperately. And by the way, I have this very interesting article here. I don't know if you've seen this. The state of Israel is waging an orderly and funded campaign of ethnic cleansing and crimes against humanity. The fight against Jewish terrorism in the West Bank territories must go on through a phase and be done with more determination. It's no longer possible to come to terms with daily terrorism waged, facilitated, and encouraged and backed by the Israeli government. What's happening these days across the West Bank is not the work of 70 teenage criminals, as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu tried to claim in his naivety. These are not the crimes of an exceptional small minority among the residents of the settlements and territories. It's, in fact, the state of Israel waging this organized, orderly, funded campaign of ethnic cleansing and crime against humanity. Pretty extreme article here, probably by a far leftist anti-Semite, right? Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's by the former prime minister of Israel, Ehud Olmert. So, yes, folks, the former prime minister of Israel, just before Netanyahu took over, he's the one calling the state of Israel a bunch of terrorists. I think you might have to stop killing people, actually. I think you might have. So much work goes into this, and it's all funded by you going to thealexjonesstore.com. So this is a fundraiser time right now. We need to be raising funds because we are launching into the next stage of our, you know, rocket trip. We've shed one booster, and now the new one's firing up, and we need you to fill our tank and give us the fuel to get to that next level. So please do go to thealexjonesstore.com. There is a mega sale going on right now. You're getting 40% off methylene blue tincture, methylene blue caps, Ultra DNA Revival, Shilajit caps and gummies, up to 35% off methylene red tincture, colostrum, and MK Ultra, and you're getting 30% off all apparel, shirts, hats, hoodies, and everything else. You know, what we sell you at thealexjonesstore.com are just like these amazing naturally occurring vitamins, minerals, supplements, just CMOS and Shilajit. It just is like God's gift to humanity. At some point, humanity discovers it, and get it at thealexjonesstore.com.
You are listening to an AJN Live Frontline Report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show, alexjoneslive.com. Follow us on X at AJN Live. You can follow me at Harrison H. Smith. Follow Alex at Real Alex Jones. And of course, find us on Rumble as well, rumble.com/the Alex Jones Show Live. Now, I got a lot of other stuff to talk about. I spent all yesterday talking about the rape inquiry, rape gang inquiry. There are more developments to that. We've got more videos to show just how thorough the Muslim takeover of the UK has been. We also have some updates. The Chud the Builder case. He's had his bond revoked by a judge despite shooting somebody in self-defense in a situation in which he shot himself as well. So I want to talk about Chud the Builder as well. The UK, in addition to the rape gang madness and the immigration chaos, is killing a bunch of ponies for no reason. I mean, again, you know, it's just like, there's so much evil in the world to talk about. There's only so much time. But I really feel like we need to stick to this Iran deal. Israeli officials believe President Trump could potentially delay weapon shipments or impose an arms embargo on Israel in the future if Netanyahu won't withdraw forces from Lebanon. That, according to Mariv, Joe Kent responds, this is exactly what needs to happen. It's what needed to happen a long time ago. And it's one of the absurdities of all of this, of the fact that we seem incapable of pulling the leash when the leash is in fact attached from our hand to their neck. Like, it doesn't make any sense. They can't do anything without our permission. Like, they don't have the weapons. They don't have the capability. Even in the last video we saw where the guy says the heroic actions of the pilots over Iran, the Israeli pirates pilots over Iran, you know, Israel doesn't have the air tankers necessary to refuel like they need to in order for the bombers or the fighter jets to pass over Syria and Iraq to get to Iran. Israel can't do that without us. They can't bomb Israel without bomb Iran from planes without American refuelers helping them to get there. They can't protect themselves without American missiles protecting them. So how is it that we are incapable of restraining a country that needs us to do everything? It doesn't make any sense. It's a choice that we're making to allow them to kill with impunity, which I remind you is in fact the point of all of this. Again, you don't have to listen to me. You don't have to listen to your old pal Harrison. You can listen to the former Prime Minister of Israel, Ehud Olmert, who, you know, he's just like a fixture of Israeli politics and has been for decades. And he writes an opinion article in Haaretz saying the state of Israel is waging an orderly and funded campaign of ethnic cleansing and crimes against humanity, specifically referring to the Jewish terrorism killing Christians and Muslims in the West Bank. But that's just sort of one outlet, one front on their eighth front war, if you count the psychological war they're waging against, you know, us. Today, he says, it can be said, with no choice, that the state of Israel is waging an organized, orderly, and funded campaign of ethnic cleansing in a crime against humanity, not in the Gaza Strip, not in southern Lebanon, not in Syria. Well, hold on there, pal. Well, hold on, pal. I agree with you. They are waging an ethnic cleansing. They are committing crimes against humanity in the West Bank, but let's not say that they're not doing that in Gaza and Lebanon. I mean, they are. So let's not get too far out of our skis here. He says, not in the Gaza Strip, not in Lebanon. I would rephrase that to say, in addition to the Gaza Strip, in addition to southern Lebanon, in addition to Syria, in the West Bank territories, under the absolute security rule of the state and its security law enforcement systems. Yet again, another example of a humiliation of Donald Trump, where Donald Trump, when so often he does give responses that are more vague, more nuanced, more able to be interpreted in multiple ways. Typically, if he was asked about, like, well, what's Israel doing in the West Bank? He might say, it's a complicated situation. We'll see. You know, something a little vague. He didn't keep it vague. He said on video in front of the world media, you cannot settle the West Bank. You will not annex the West Bank. It's too much. You have to withdraw. This is the geopolitical equivalent of spitting in his face, doing it anyway, and ignoring the consequences because there are none. And that, again, is kind of the worst possible position to take, right? You can either do something about it, you can ignore it, but to make strident demands, to threaten repercussions, and then to do nothing, that's like the worst possible option that Trump has taken up to this point. And I'm glad to see that people like the former Prime Minister of Israel agree with me. What do you know? What do you know? By the way, Mark Levin is flipping out about all of this. We'll go to him in just a second. But I just want to go to a bunch of clips of President Trump and what he's been saying over the past few days. And while many people out there, the likes of Ben Shapiro and Mark Levin and John Podoretz, are questioning what has come over Trump, I have the opposite question, which is, where's this guy been? Where's this been the entire time? Why hasn't this been the stance the entire time? Because we wouldn't be in a situation as bad as we are in, because we're not in a good situation. We just lost a war, folks. I mean, it's not that complicated. We just started a war for Israel. We lost it, and now they're trying to keep us in it and keep us losing because it benefits them. We could have avoided all of this if Donald Trump had taken this stance with Israel from the very beginning. God only knows why he didn't. God only knows why he's changing his tune now. Again, my read of the situation is the rhetoric is kind of meaningless, and that the economic reality is that the war has to end. So now he's saying what he needs to say to justify the war ending, where previously he was saying what he needed to say to have the war continue. The thing he's saying isn't actually impacting whether or not the war is continuing. That's all economic and strategic. The words are just the window dressing for us to appreciate. Let's go to clip number 28 here, as President Trump is, in fact, open to nuclear enrichment for Iran, a statement that, again, is in a flagrant contradiction to everything else he said this entire time. Where's he been, folks? Where has this guy been? Clip 28.
We've been pretty tough in that. You know, it is a little hard, though, when you say that somebody wants it, other people have it, other adjoining states have it. And you're not letting them have it for purposes of electricity and things like that. It's always a little tough. You have to use a little common sense, please.
Yeah, makes sense. No, that's a little common sense goes a long way, these types of negotiations. So what was that whole last 100 days about, I guess, is the question. Again, it's just like, okay, all right. It does kind of remind me of him mentioning, he's like, I think we'd have a good relationship with the leader of Iran. The interviewer's like, you mean the guy whose family you killed? You mean the guy who you killed his wife and child and parents? You think you're going to have a good relationship with him? Trump's like, it's business. It's like, no, it's not. It's actually not. You killed his family. You killed his family, Trump. So why would he want to negotiate with you? That wasn't a good idea, actually. Kind of similar type of thing. He's like, yeah, we got to use common sense, you know. They got to be able to have a little nuclear, right? It's like, well, you did spend the last 90-something days trying to kill them all. So, what are we talking about here? My God. I mean, again, it's like, it would be one thing if it seemed like we had a clear and realistic strategy going into it. Hey, sometimes things go wrong. What are you going to say? The frustration with all of this is that this negative outcome was predictable from not just the beginning of this conflict. It was predictable all the way back in October of 2023 when I did literally predict it. But I won't waste your time going to that, but I did retweet my video from my coverage where I was hosting the Alex Jones Show on October 9th, 2023, and we laid out that this conflict that had just started 2 days before would eventually lead to American attacks on Iran, and that even with that, it wouldn't have worked, and Israel was screwed, basically. But hey, who's going to listen to me? Who's going to listen to me, who everybody is smearing as an anti-Semite, because I'm correct about all of this stuff? Let's go to clip number 29 here. President Trump rebuking Israel over its war against Hezbollah. Let's watch.
Israel's fighting Hezbollah too long, and too many people are being killed. And you don't have to knock down an apartment house every time you're looking for somebody, because there are a lot of people in those apartment houses, and they're not all Hezbollah, that I can tell you. And I suggested to Israel to let Syria take care of Hezbollah. Because to be honest with you, I think they'd do a better job of doing it. And I didn't like Syria. I didn't like where 2 hours before we're signing the agreement that there was an attack in Lebanon, in Beirut. It wasn't like in the southern side, and you know, it was in Beirut. I did not like that. I let them know that. I didn't like it, not at all. But I think that Syria, you know, he's pulled that country together amazingly quickly. He's very capable.
We can take it out. I mean, again, it's like, okay, you don't like them doing it, but like they can't do it without us. So, and they don't seem to care that you don't like it. They keep doing it. In fact, they seem to do it more the more you talk about how you don't like it. It's just crazy. It's just crazy that these people are just dictate our foreign policy. It truly is wild. And just once again, Joe Kent was right from the very beginning when he said this. And he just said this on Redacted. This is how they drag America into war. Iran gets accused. Israel waves intelligence. Congress panics. And suddenly your sons, your tax dollars, and your future are being fed into another Middle East blood machine. Let's go to clip number 16 here. This is Joe Kent, former head of the Office of National Intelligence. Let's watch.
We know what the Iranians are going to do. More than likely, they're going to take some of those unfrozen assets, and they more than likely are going to restock Hezbollah, restock Hamas. The Israelis are going to come up, and they're going to say, oh, look, we've caught these guys red-handed. Here's the intelligence. Smack in the face to you, President. And that's going to be used as a justification to get us back into the war, because then they'll say that the Iranians violated the agreement, because we're putting so much on this stupid piece of paper, this agreement that we have to have, whereas we'll have much more leverage. We just walk away from the situation altogether. And tell the Israelis, look, you're on your own. If you want to fight all your neighbors, have at it, but we're not footing the bill anymore.
Joe, before we get you out of here, I have to ask you about that bombshell from your former boss, Tulsi Gabbard, of course, the head of the DNI the other day, dropping on her, really on her way out the door, this bombshell about these biolabs in over 30 countries. I don't know if the number was 140 or 150 of these biolabs all around the world being funded by the United States. Of course, people immediately jumped on her saying she's carrying the water for Putin and Russian disinformation. The Russians told us that this was the case. We had even reported it here on the show through our own reporting over the past few years. So this was confirmation. A lot of people were vilified for drawing attention to it. Maybe pull the curtain back a little bit on that decision to release this information, what you knew about it. And what do you think that these biolabs were really doing on American tax dollars?
So, again, I wanted to let that play out anyway, because just a reminder, like, of all of the lies that we've been told that all surround these wars, like, it doesn't matter what they need to say. The point is to get the war. They just want the war. They need the war. They'll cover up whatever they need to. They'll say whatever they need to as long as they get the war. Or as long as they get the, as Joe Kent puts it, blood machine a very good thing that President Trump was able to sign the MOU with Iran and end this war. I pray the peace holds. Restraining Israel and focusing on stability in the region will be critical to ensure it lasts. God bless America. So again, I am not under any illusions that this is going to be the end of the conflict by any means. You can see the way that Israel and the Israeli firsters are responding. And as we've laid out over and over again, just the understanding of the geopolitical reality, the time frame that we're operating here, operating with, that Israel has destroyed its reputation. It has put itself in an unrecoverable death spiral of support in America, which they require. They do not require it if and only if Iran is destroyed and they stand alone as a sole superpower in the Middle East. That's what the goal has been the entire time. That's what Netanyahu keeps saying. They have not achieved that goal. Therefore, they are still basically on the losing end of this spectrum, right? Like for them, it's not a question of like gradients. Now, it's not a question of a spectrum actually, because it's not like, well, we can get pretty good here. We can get some of what we want over here and some of what we want over here to Israel. This is an existential crisis. And the question is, do they destroy Iran completely or not? And that's the only thing that matters. If they destroy Iran, great. They got what they wanted. The gamble was worth it. The Holocaust in Gaza, the murder in Lebanon will go, you know, unpunished, and that'll be it. If they don't destroy Iran, then all they will have done is ensured their own destruction down the line. That's it. One of the White House terror plot organizers is a DACA recipient. Well, I'll let you go back and watch what Alex said about the terror attack on the UFC. I don't necessarily buy it. But let's continue with just President Trump's statements. I'm just going to go through a lot of these here. Let's go to clip number 32 first. This is Trump praising Iran once again. Now, if you've been watching The War Room, if you've been watching the Alex Jones Network for the last couple of years, you've had not just sort of a window into what's actually happening behind the scenes with these negotiations, the way that they're changing, the actual things being pursued by the people, regardless of what the statements they make are. And you know that they keep changing the terms on Iran. And it's been incredibly frustrating to watch. And it must be incredibly frustrating for Iran, because over and over again, there would be a situation where they would endure some sort of attack, an assassination of some sort, whatever it is. And they would say, okay, we're coming to the negotiation table. You know, the topic is they don't want Iran to have nuclear weapons. They'll go to that talk. They'll sit down. And the American / Israeli negotiators go, actually, we want no enrichment whatsoever. And it's like, well, that was never the deal. This was supposed to be about weapons. Now you've changed the terms and we're supposed to accept that without any pushback. Like, that can't happen. Then it happens again. And then it's like, well, now it's not even about the nukes. Now it's about the ballistic missile program itself. Literally for the last 2 years, I've been talking about the Iranian ballistic missile program and the fact they have underground missile cities. Like, it's all this sort of stuff that if you weren't watching the Alex Jones Network, if you weren't watching people like Tell You the Truth, if you were just watching Fox News or whatever else, you had no idea about the ballistic missile program. You had no idea about the underground missile cities, which probably means you were shocked that Iran had the ability to respond at the scale and with the ferocity and ferociousness with which it did respond. Not a surprise to us. Not a surprise to us that the bases got taken out right away. Not a surprise that they had hypersonic missiles that the Iron Dome couldn't intercept. Like, all of this was obvious. But again, the negotiations kept getting the rugs pulled out from under them, because they would go to the negotiations expecting terms about nuclear enrichment. And instead, we would say, actually, we want you to get rid of your ballistic missile program, which again is insane. I mean, it's an entire industry in Iran. They make a lot of money with it too, by the way, because they sell a lot of their tech to Russia and other people. And so it's like, okay, you know, basically we're putting a gun to their head and going, look, we're either going to completely destroy you, or you need to destroy yourself, or you need to completely disarm, make yourself completely vulnerable, destroy the hundreds of thousands of missiles you have stockpiled. Like, it was a ridiculous demand that no sovereign nation would ever capitulate to. But that was the demand we were making, even though we were actually opening the discussions on entirely different terms. Long story short, there was never going to be a negotiation because it was always like this. It was always, they were willing to meet us on one thing. Great. Then we'll change what we actually want. Oh, they're willing to meet us on enrichment. Well, now we're going to say no enrichment whatsoever. Oh, they're willing to meet us on nuclear weapons. Well, now we're going to demand that they destroy their ballistic missile program completely and totally disarm themselves. Ridiculous claims that were designed to ensure the war actually started. Crazy. So let's go to clip 32 here. Trump praising Iran, again, saying the obvious thing, which is that the demand that they get rid of ballistic missiles was always a pipe dream nonsense. It was always nonsense. You just finally learned that. Okay, let's watch.
Yeah. You said in the press conference, you said you don't mind Iran having ballistic missiles. Can you elaborate on that? I want to make sure we understand your position.
No, I'm saying that if other countries have them, it's a little bit unfair for them not to have some. A ballistic missile is not the same thing as what we're talking about when we talk nuclear. But if Saudi Arabia and Qatar and they all have some, I would say in relative proportion, I think it's okay. That's what I mean.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. We could have avoided this war then, huh? I guess this whole war thing wasn't really all that necessary, was it? Let's go to clip 34 here. This is Donald Trump calling out Bibi in particular, saying, what are you complaining about? Let's watch.
Many countries all over the world are so, every country, I think Israel too. Look, think of what Israel's getting. They're not going to be nuked. It's very simple. I told Bibi, Bibi, your biggest risk was that they drop a nuclear weapon into the middle of Israel. They'd only need one, and there would be no more Israel. Think of it, Bibi. You got the best, the most important thing that you were asking for is that. So I think they're happy. Some people are going to be.
It's almost funny. I mean, it's almost funny that it's like, look, all we want is not to be nuked. Okay. This is about the survival of Israel. Okay. They're, you know, Iran's trying to create a nuke and they're trying to kill us all. And that's what we need to stop. Trump's like, all right, I stopped it. And they're like, you jackass, you idiot. You have to keep going. He's like, but I did the thing that you wanted. I mean, that was the point, right? That was the big existential crisis, was that they would have a nuke and we achieved the goal in that regard, whether they're not going to have a nuke, right? That you're happy about this, right? They're just like, you absolute moron. You really think that's what it was about? It was never about that. That's what we told the plebeians. That's what we told the hoi polloi was what it was about. It was never about that. We knew that that was never a threat. We knew that that was never a real thing that we were concerned about. We want to render them incapable of responding in any way to our antagonism. We want them to be like Syria. Or like Lebanon, where we get to go on a whim, you know, perhaps to celebrate a holiday or, you know, because we feel like it. We want to be able to bomb their civilians by the dozens, and then they have to just take it, and they can't do anything about that. That's the only situation that Israel would ever accept when it came to Iran. It was never a viable position to achieve ever without American boots on the ground, something that, God bless him, Donald Trump has resisted up until this point. Hopefully he continues to resist it. We're going to continue this coverage. I'm going to show you videos from Mark Levin and John Podoritz and Ben Shapiro on the other side. See what they're so angry about. And then we'll be joined by Brandon Weikert in the next hour. I saw the tweet he did yesterday of just like, I don't think this war is over. So we could be right back in it a couple days from now. Things go as they.
Inflation is up. That's an issue. So how does Berkshire handle that with its businesses?
Well, we can't handle runaway inflation except not to be there in the way of it. If you look at the number of countries that have had runaway inflation since World War II, you know, in my lifetime, it's very large. Once you create that, it becomes a different world. And of course, you have countries that going bankrupt like six or seven times. I mean, it's just amazing what people do. Not having faith in the money does to a country. It turns it into something else.
Dollar collapse means we keep continuing on where we are. Dollar devalues. We've got massive inflation. You raise interest rates to slow that inflation down. So this is going to have a cataclysmic effect on the insurance industry, on pension funds, on everything. And on the
let's be clear, though, a dollar being the world currency is how we could just print it and buy whatever we wanted. If the world sees it like the Mexican peso or worse, we're screwed. So here's Prince Charles, the king, announcing the digital chains, the mark of the beast system, and a dovetail with Tony Blair, who's globally, through the UN and Bill Gates, standardized the world ID that the UK, under orders of the king, I thought he's just ceremonial, no, he could dissolve Parliament anytime he wants, is now going into place. This all ties into everything. We'll talk to the top economist, who's a great patriot, Dr. Kirk Kelly, in a moment about it, but here's the clips.
My ministers will also proceed with the introduction of digital ID that will modernize how citizens interact with public services.
Tell us a bit about what it means for what government should do in terms of its digital infrastructure, digital ID, data centers, and so on.
The first thing a country needs to do is to unify all of their data so it can be consumed and used by the AI model. You have to take all of your healthcare data, your diagnostic data, your electronic health records, your genomic data. We have to take all of this data we have in our country and move it into a single, if you will, unified data platform.
What they do is Oracle make big donations to Tony Blair's Institute, and Tony Blair's Institute advocates for further advantages for Oracle and Oracle affiliated entities. Listen, the centralization of data and the centralization of power is part of a dark and nefarious agenda.
People are really crazy if they don't call you. You're on record the biggest company because you have the best ratings, the best gold and silver prices. It is the smart move. Get a free consultation. They can roll over financial instruments.
This should be a happy time, right? So don't let the news scare you, but rather use the wisdom, the creativity that God gave you. Go into tangible assets that have zero counterparty risk. Silver was up over 140% last year. Since January 30th, when it corrected and it had a 50% correction, went down into the 60s, it's almost 90. Literally, since February, silver's up over 30%, Alex. There is a path to safety here financially, and that's what tangible assets do. This is what
God
the numbers
always
are
gives
telling
his
us.
People a way out, but the people perish always. For lack of knowledge.
Always. He always does. He's never going to say something, even if it's the mark of the beast. When he talks about it in Revelation, he's not going to say something unless we have a choice to either accept or reject, because he didn't create robots.
KEPM.com/gold. Sign up for the email there to get a free consultation. We'll call you right back. Or you can call the number 720-605-3000. The smartest investment you could have made in the last 3 years. I'm telling you right now, this is the place to go. 720-605-3000.
Analysis. Reports. It's the Alex Jones Show.
Sweet dreams are made of these. Who am I to
welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We're covering the reaction to the peace deal or the Memorandum of Understanding with Iran. Again, we just showed some breaking videos that J.D. Vance, some of the coverage he's been providing or some of the answers he's been providing in interviews and press conferences. They're trying to basically make this seem like a bad thing and blame J.D. Vance for it. It's kind of weird. It's actually what we've wanted this entire time. I'm going to show you about five more clips of Donald Trump, some of his statements at the G7 event yesterday. A really remarkable change in attitude for Donald Trump, where he seemingly acknowledging things that have been ignored up until this point, including the brutal inhumanity of Israel's tactics, especially when it comes to the nation of Lebanon. And again, I just, if you've been watching our coverage of the Middle East ever, Lebanon has always been a central fixture of it. As you may know, I do a show called Moonbase Live. My co-host is Lebanon John, and we've been friends since we were 10, and we were 11 when 9/11 happened, and His family was from Lebanon. He would read Lebanese news sources. So since I was in middle school, I've seen the Middle East conflict through the eyes of the Lebanese. And when that's your perspective, things actually make a lot more sense. It actually, especially if you see Lebanon as this like ultimate barrier to the greater Israel project, you see the actions of Hezbollah in their correct context and how they were created and the fact that Israeli tanks were slaughtering Lebanese civilians in the 80s, long before Hezbollah was even an organization. It becomes absurd when they say, well, they're killing Lebanese people because Hezbollah existed. It's a complete inversion. Hezbollah exists because Israel was killing Lebanese civilians. And the tragedy of Lebanon, the missed opportunity that Lebanon represents. In the 1960s, Lebanon was referred to as the Paris of the Mediterranean. Beirut, rather, was the Paris of the Mediterranean. Lebanon was this interesting artifact during the Cold War when it wasn't really on either side. And so Beirut in particular became this hotbed of diplomacy where people from the Eastern Bloc, the Soviet Empire, and the West could actually meet in open ground. U.S.-Iran MOU eases energy prices but faces sharp pushback from Israel and GOP hawks. And look, it's not that complicated, folks. This is good for us. This is good for the world. This is good for peace. It's obviously good for America not to be spending our money, wasting our time and energy focusing on this stuff that has absolutely nothing to do with us. While meanwhile, our country is still very much in the grips of the, DEI madness, the economic stupidity of H-1B visas. I mean, we have real problems in this country that are not being addressed because so much time, so much energy, so much effort, so much attention from our government is poured into these conflicts that are for other people, that aren't even for us, and that are actually for people that shouldn't even really be our friends, that aren't our friends if you actually look at the actions and the rather than the rhetoric. Israel doesn't benefit us in any way. They see us like a servant or a slave. And they get very mad when we don't obey unquestioningly. It's absurd that this is what it's our priority at a time when America itself continues to teeter on the brink of socialist madness. Like if the Republicans, the conservatives lose and the Democrats take power, they are as radical as they ever were. There has been absolutely nothing done to substantially or tangibly prevent the absolute onslaught of tyranny that they keep promising every time you put a microphone in front of their face. They talk about how they just can't wait to get back in power to stuff the Supreme Court and pass amnesty for everybody that's crossed the border, to open up the borders again, to throw their political enemies in prison. I mean, they are salivating. They are chomping at the bit, ready to unleash the most vicious tyranny the world has ever seen. And they may get the chance because Donald Trump has sacrificed his once-in-a-lifetime coalition on the altar of Israel. It's outrageous and infuriating, and it's time we once and for all just recognize what the actual dynamics are here. Instant reaction, Ted Cruz blasts plan to send billions to Ayatollah. Send Ted Cruz. Can we send Ted Cruz? We'll send you $300 billion and a fat Canadian. How's that? Cuban, born in Canada, representing Israel from the state of Texas. How about we take this international menace, we send him to Iran. They can do with him what they will. Let's go to clip 35 here. This is Donald Trump. We'll go through a couple clips of Donald Trump during the G7 conference where he was taking questions and answering them honestly and forcefully. Let's go to clip 35 first. This is Donald Trump talking about the expense of the war with Iran. Let's watch.
I'm thrilled to report, and by the way, those last 2 days were brutal. $200 million worth of bombs. And, it is expensive too, by the way, aside from everything else.
He's like, the money's not really the issue, but like, it's a lot of money. But also, it's a lot of money. And it is kind of about the money. Actually, the reason the war is coming to a conclusion at this point is almost exclusively because of the money. Let's go to clip 36 here. This is Donald Trump. Once again, just admitting that this peace agreement, this memorandum of understanding, is really a necessity. He actually didn't really have a choice. Let's watch.
I'm going to get bad press. I know that. Now, if I did the opposite, if I went out and continued to bomb them for another 4 hours, just bomb the hell out of them, I'd get bad press on that. No, there's nothing I can do. But what this does is it allows the ships to go. If we keep bombing, those ships won't be going. And you're talking about $500, $600, $700 million a day. It's a lot of money. A lot of money. That's why the world is okay. It's liquid. It's fine. Also, we run out of reserves in about 4 weeks. You know, there are reserves all over the world, and we would really run out. And there'll be a time when you wouldn't be able to get it. And you want to see bedlam? So for all those so-called geniuses that want to show me how smart they are, ask them why didn't they blow up General Soleimani. Ask that of the general and a couple of other people that I like very much, but boy, are they wrong. Go ahead. How about you?
Yeah, so there's him admitting, all right, we only have 4 weeks of reserves left, so you got to open the strait now so that you have 4 weeks of buffer time to get the deliveries where they're supposed to be so that you don't have this cascading negative economic effect of not having the fuel to run the factories and having to prioritize or ration fuel to certain industries. And, you know, I wonder, because Donald Trump is like, I guess he thinks they're stupid, but like these people aren't stupid. I don't know any, I don't have a degree. I don't know anything. I don't have connections or anything, but I know that we're going to run out of oil. I can understand the economic effects. You think these people don't, like, it's this weird thing where Trump is like, they don't understand that. No, they understand. They want the collapse. Like, that's the point of all of this. They want the restrictions of oil. They want there to be shortages. They want there to be rationing, because guess who gets to dictate who gets oil once rationing gets involved? They do. So, you know, Donald Trump really is preventing their ultimate plan here. I'm having trouble figuring out why, because up to this point, he's seemingly completely in on their entire plan and doing absolutely everything that they want. I understand that the economic reality is caught up to them. Basically, they had this time period in which they could try to get something done. And if they don't, they have to stop trying, because you have to open up the strait, because you have to have an economy. So this is just necessity. But at the same time, it's like, why did we get into this in the first place? Everybody knew they were going to close the Strait of Hormuz. It's not that complicated. These people lied to you, or were willfully ignorant, or wanted it to happen. Or they're stupid, or the economists, the highest realms of our government and military, are idiots. I don't think that's the case. So they're evil. I mean, they're either idiots or evil, and they're not idiots. So, okay. Stories at alexjoneslive.com. Trump signs memorandum of understanding with Iran, effectively ending war, opening Strait of Hormuz. Wednesday evening, President Trump signed that MOU with the Islamic Republic of Iran, effectively ending the war between the two nations. And while further negotiations take place, a major global impact from this agreement is the opening of the Strait of Hormuz, a key energy choke point. The agreement was officiated while Trump was meeting with French President Emmanuel Macron at Versailles. First tankers cross strait under Iran deal. Israeli strikes raise doubt in Lebanon. So three Saudi-flagged supertankers carrying 6 million barrels of crude sailed through the Strait of Hormuz on Thursday, hours after President Donald Trump signed a deal with Iran to end the war that has disrupted global energy supplies. But in Lebanon, where more than 1 million people are displaced by the fighting, Israeli forces launched fresh airstrikes on Thursday morning, raising doubts about how far Trump would go to force his wartime allies to halt an offensive he pledged to end. So again, they are obsessed with abusing Lebanon. They refuse to stop. They are not achieving anything in Lebanon. They are, I guess, you know, taking over portions of the south there that they intend on completely, you know, eradicating life in that area to create a buffer zone. But they have been incapable of dealing any substantial damage to Hezbollah, which continues to really shock everybody with their technical capabilities. We reported yesterday they took down a Israeli drone something like 4 miles into the air, something that they were not expected to have the technical capability to do. So Israel does not have the manpower. Their manpower they do have does not have the skill or courage necessary to face off the fighters of Hezbollah. And again, you can You know, think of this however you want. I'm just telling you the truth. I'm just telling you how it is. Like, honestly, if it was Americans on the ground, we could probably take out Hezbollah. But it probably wouldn't actually be all that difficult. We've got the manpower. We've got the Marines and the Navy. And, like, we can do it. We can absolutely do it. But we're not Israel's bitch, so we're not going to do it. They have to do it, and they can't do it. So they're trying to get Jolani to do it. But again, as I was saying at the beginning of this segment, when you look at Lebanon as the center point of Middle Eastern affairs, like right now, you know, Israel is the sun of the Middle Eastern solar system, right? Everything is seen from the perspective of Israel. What makes Israel safer? What makes them unsafe? What are their goals? How do they achieve those? When you talk about the Middle East in America, you're almost certainly getting a perspective from the Israeli point of view. If instead you shift your point of view a couple hundred miles to the north and look at it from a Lebanese point of view, it takes on an entirely different and deeply sinister character. There's the map that they've released showing the dead zone that they plan on eradicating life from to protect themselves from the consequences of their own actions. And I'm not just talking about looking at the immediate, you know, warfare reality from the perspective of Lebanon. I'm talking about a historical perspective from Lebanon. When you understand that Beirut used to be the Paris of the Mediterranean, that up until the 1980s, Lebanon was a majority Christian country, you know, like France or Germany, you know, a majority Christian country like the UK or Ireland and Lebanon. It was like almost European. It wasn't a Muslim extremist country. You didn't have, you know, Saudi Arabian style Wahhabi Islam, you know, dominating the country until Israel arrived. Until Israel showed up, forced a bunch of Palestinians out, forced the Palestinians into Lebanon. Lebanon really has paid the price for being a generous and protective country this entire time. They welcome in the Palestinian refugees, as a neighboring country probably should when they're civilians being attacked by military forces and forced to flee their homes. It's the Christian thing to do to open your door to those people. Unfortunately, that opened the door to further Israeli incursions, which then itself led to the creation of Hezbollah. But you have to understand, it was majority Christian until the 80s. It was only in the 80s that it flipped to where it's majority non-Christian, but still it is the country with the most sizable Christian population. There is still it is a republic. It's one of the absurdities when they say, you know, Israel's the only democracy in the Middle East. Literally right next door is a republic in which a Christian, a Sunni, and a Shiite are always guaranteed the three top positions in the national government. The president's always Christian. The secretary of state's always, you know, I don't know exactly what the positions are, but it's those three top positions, the prime minister, the presidency, and the whatever else. They always are held by one of those religions. It's a pluralistic nation. I mean, this is the absurdity of the claims that, like, you know, Islam is going to conquer the Middle East unless Israel is there. Since Israel's creation in 1948, the Christian population of every country in the Middle East has been decimated entirely. And it goes on today. The last Christian village in the West Bank is being burned as we speak by radical Jewish settlers. Who are driving out the Christians and the Muslims there. They're doing it in Lebanon as well. They're bombing and destroying churches and statues of the Virgin Mary and Crusader castles. Meanwhile, you've got a bunch of Christians here in America thinking that what Israel's doing is somehow righteous and virtuous. They are the enemies of Christians. And that's something that Tucker Carlson calls out. Let's go to clip 37 here. This is Trump calling out the Israeli war crimes in Lebanon. And once again, just want to remind you, Lebanon never did nothing to nobody. They are simply existing, and that is enough for Israel to try to kill them. Let's watch. 37. What's going on the list here?
Do it. I mean, you have people living there. Buildings are being dropped on top of them or right alongside of them. How would you like to live there? It's so unfair, especially Beirut. You know, you go into Beirut, and I looked at the scene 2 days ago, yesterday, where they hit. That was a big hit. That was unnecessary in my book. Yeah, please.
It's all unnecessary. It's all been unnecessary this entire time. You know what was unnecessary is killing everybody in Gaza. And what was also unnecessary? Bombing Beirut and depopulating the southern part of Lebanon. Yeah, all of this is, you know what else was unnecessary? Overthrowing Assad and replacing him with a radical Muslim so that the Christian and Alawite populations in Syria could be systematically genocided, ethnically cleansed. You know what was also unnecessary? The war with Iran. Yeah, all of this has been unnecessary. It's all in service of Israel's territorial ambitions. If that's not necessary, if it's not necessary that Israel be a superpower to rival the United States and dominate the Middle East, unquestionably, if that's not a necessity, then none of this is a necessity. And that's not just a necessity. That's not only not a necessity. Israel's domination of the Middle East will simply be a recipe for endless warfare forever against a constant churning, you know, deluge of whoever opposes them in the area. I mean, is Iraq particularly stable right now? Has Syria stopped being a battlefield of, you know, ethnic and religious conflict, or has it only gotten worse through all of this? Everything we do in the Middle East kills Christians and destabilizes the region, and there has not been a single instance the other direction, and it's always at the behest and for the sake of Israel, for the love of God. Why are we doing this? Clip 39 here. Again, Trump showing some empathy and sympathy for the people of Lebanon who, as he puts it, have been living in hell for the last 50 or 60 years. Not because they decided to conquer Israel, the exact other way around. Let's watch. This is clip 39 here.
And you'll see that when you see the agreement, but it's appropriate that we release the agreement. And we did send a copy to Israel, by the way. They've been a good partner. Again, I think they could do better with respect to Hezbollah. I'm not saying they shouldn't protect themselves. I'm saying when two drones are shot into the desert and drop harmlessly, you don't have to knock down buildings in Beirut. They could behave better. And frankly, they could do a better job. I love them as a partner. They were terrific. But they could do a much better job with Hezbollah. On that, I don't think they're doing well. And I feel very bad for Lebanon. Lebanon's been, you know, it was a great culture. It was a great, they had the professors, the doctors, the lawyers. It was an incredible culture, maybe the highest in the Middle East for years and years, centuries. And for the last 50, 60 years, they have been just trashed. They have been living in hell.
Now, he's right. What happened? What happened about 50 or 60 years ago? What could it have been that caused this once thriving Christian nation to descend into chaos and misery? What could it have been? Was it something they did? Or was it something that was done to them? Finally, we'll go to clip 38 here because this is very funny, and I feel like you can kind of tell Trump, like, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have said it like that. But it's the truth, and he acknowledges it. Israel is, as he puts it, a very small partner to America. Let's watch.
But it's been an amazing partnership. But he will say, we're the big partner, and he's the very small partner, and that's true. So...
yeah, they're very small. The very small partner. Let's go, finally, to clip number 4 here. We'll get as much of this in as we can. Ben Shapiro loses his mind, laments that Trump's MOU with Iran isn't popular in Israel. Well, who cares? Let's watch. Clip 4 here. Ben Shapiro. Clip 4, Ben Shapiro losing his mind. Let's watch.
I'm noticing that Mohammed Khalibaf, who will apparently on Friday be literally in a photo op with the Vice President of the United States, I cannot express to you how stomach-turning that is. I don't care who the Vice President is. I don't care who the President is. Leaders of the United States of America in a photo op with a mass murdering terrorist supporter like Mohammed Khalibaf shaking hands 6 months after he blew away 42,000 innocent people in the streets.
No, 42,000.
And weeks
after he was... Hold on. Laura Loomer says it's 100,000. I don't know if y'all saw this. Remember, it was like, oh, they've killed a couple thousand protesters. Then it's like, actually, we're going to say 30,000. And then Trump comes out and gives a speech, and then suddenly it's 42,000. Where are these getting these numbers? God only knows. Like 2 days ago, Laura Loomer comes out and goes, I can't believe we're making a deal with Iran. People who have killed 100,000 protesters in their country. And it's just like, you know, just say 6 million. I mean, if you're just making up numbers, just go for broke. Say whatever the hell you want, because it obviously is completely independent of reality. You have nothing to base this on. And you're desperate to try to make it seem like, you know, Iran are the heartless murderers here. I feel the same way every time Donald Trump shakes hands with Benjamin Netanyahu, Ben Shapiro. Why is this it stomach churning that the great, the glorious United States of America has a president who will sit there and shake hands with the petulant, murderous psychopaths like Bibi Netanyahu or Ben Gavir or Bezalel Smotrich? These people should have been arrested a long time ago for being the terrorist extremists that they are. But Ben Shapiro is like, I don't care who the president, vice president is. You're not allowed to like somebody I don't like. You can go back to Israel. Ben Shapiro, let's go back to, what did Alex call him? Rat-eyed something? He's a rat. Let's go back to the rat.
After he blew away 42,000 innocent people in the streets, and weeks after his administration was firing missiles at literally all of our allies in the region, and continues to support every terrorist group in the region, and is currently continuing to control the strait. Like right now, it is not fully open for business, unless the Iranians have quote-unquote decided it is. The idea here is that somehow this administration and the deal that has been cut weakens Hezbollah. I'm not seeing it so much. I'm not seeing it. Maybe it's there. Again, we haven't seen the MOU for the 1,000th time. We haven't seen the MOU. That's not because of me. I would like to see the MOU. I think you would like to see the MOU. Hell, I think we'd all like to see the MOU. If Israel is not a party to the actual talks, which they are not, they have not been included in the talks. If Israel is not a signatory to the agreement, which they are not, how in the world could you tie Israel's hands when it comes to self-defense in Lebanon while Hezbollah is firing
rockets? I can answer this because they require us entirely to do anything. That's how you tie their hands, by reminding them they're the junior partner and everything they do is at our pleasure. That's how you tie their hands. Is that what he was asking? I'm not sure if that's what he was asking. Looks like Ben Shapiro's a panican. Looks like old Ben Shapiro's on AOC side, anti-Trump panican. Get over it, Ben. We're pro Hezbollah now. So, you know, if you're against that, I guess you're against Trump. I guess you're a leftist. I guess you're practically a socialist like AOC. That's how this works, right? That's the retarded logic you've been running with? Let's keep running with that, shall we? Idiots. Peace is good. Your arm been hacked off by a homeless person with a samurai sword? Try Shilajit gummies today.
A guy in Venice Beach just got his arm nearly hacked off by some tweaker with a samurai sword. And as of 4:15, he is still on the loose. And seemingly, the reaction from our local government is basically like, oh, shit, like, these things just happen. Like, this is our new normal. That, dude. I want to live in an LA that is safe to go out, where I don't have to worry about walking around and getting my arm hacked off by some tweaker looking for drugs.
Sorry, I ate a Shilajit gummy. Sorry, I thought I could finish it before that clip was over. You caught me. Shilajit gummies, folks. We're not joking. They're very good. Shilajit gummies. Are you a leftist idiot that thinks it's normal that men get their arms chopped off with swords when trying to go to the beach in California? Shilajit gummies are for you. Consumers of Shilajit gummies, they know places to avoid. If you want to avoid having your arm nearly cut off by a sword in Venice Beach, California, you need to be taking Shilajit gummies today. I do love these things. They are really delicious, but they really do give you a kick. And you only get to take one. This is the worst part of Shilajit gummies, is you want to take multiple, but you're only supposed to take one. You can take more if you want. Also, I love the Modern World Survival Stack. A massive discount if you get three products together. It's the Shilajit capsules, the Atomic Defense, and the CMOS capsules, which are packed with vitamins, minerals to support overall wellness, thyroid health, and immune function. The Atomic Defense is for daily defense and cellular support, while Shilajit capsules support natural energy, stamina, and daily vitality. Get one or all of them now at thealexjonesstore.com. Share the links at alexjoneslive.com and on Rumble at thealexjonesshowlive.com. Shilajit gummies.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Angela Merkel, the former long-term Chancellor of Germany, she was in an interview and she let it slip that she thinks they'll still be fighting, Ukraine and Russia will still be fighting that war in 10 years' time. They want it to keep it going. The military-industrial complex are cashing in. And, they're having an opportunity to test all battlefield weapons real time, and they're loving it. But, it is actually NATO that's fighting Russia. It's not Ukraine. When we have been firing, UK have been firing Storm Shadow missiles for 2.5 years with UK technicians out of our missiles, out of Ukraine, into Russia. And the French have been doing the same with the Scalps, and you Americans, you've been doing the same with your Attackums.
We gave them, I believe, $350 billion, but let's say it's something less than that, but it's a lot. And we have to equalize with Europe because Europe has given a very much smaller percentage than that. I think Europe has given 100 billion and we've given, let's say, 300 plus. And it's more important for them than it is for us. We have an ocean in between and they don't.
American missiles.
They would like to be able to do that. We'll take a look at it. They have asked about it.
How can you say we're not at war with Russia when, if Russia occupied or had a deal with Scotland and they were put their missiles into Scotland and were firing them at London, I think we'd say we're at war with Russia. We're in exactly that situation. Russia do not want to have a war with Europe or NATO. They've only got 144 million people. The combined population of NATO countries is 975 million. Russia's already the largest country in the world. They've got between $70 and $90 trillion of identified natural resources. That's the reason that the BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street want NATO to engage in a war with Russia.
And let me just stop you and back you up. They said our new business model is a wartime economy. It'll last 20 or 30 years. We will win the conventional war. We don't think Russia will ever go nuclear. And then we will break Russia up in five parts. That is Napoleonic. It's Hitlerian. And now they're back again saying it. And so, and I agree with you, we've got 900 million people. And then,
and Alex, we've done all this before. In 1991, when we told the Russians that, or the Soviet Union, let us have East Germany and let us reunify Germany. We'll never move EU and NATO an inch east of there. We've moved 1,000 miles since. What did we end up with in East Germany? We ended up with a lot of old Soviet weapons, enormous. They were sent to Yugoslavia in 1991. That's what created the war in Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia was a competitor organization to the European Union and NATO. We destroyed those countries. And then we picked apart and took what we wanted. We balkanized them in the Balkans.
Germany had free LNG and gas and energy with Angela Merkel and Putin. They were like this. I hope you don't edit this out. They were best friends until 2014. And there was a CIA coup d'etat in Kiev with Victoria Nuland. Look it up. And then it was Biden and Burisma and profit and money laundering.
So we took Croatia and Slovenia into NATO and the EU pretty quickly. We've had Montenegro since, and we blame the Serbs for it. The EU and NATO, we created that war in the Balkans. And if you remember, we bombed Belgrade for many, many months. There's no way they could fight back against us. We're not wearing the white hats in this, Alex, and I'm ashamed of what part we've played in wars in Europe.
This is an emergency transmission from FEMA Region 6 in occupied North America.
There is a war. It's happening now. It will decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. We are the resistance. Join us and share the links now at alexjoneslive.com.
Now in the 21st century, it's time to stand up and realize that we should not allow ourselves to be crammed into this rat maze. We should not submit to dehumanization. The 21st century is going to be a new century. Not the century of slavery. Not the century of lies and issues of no significance and classism and statism and all the rest of modes of control. It's going to be the age of humankind standing up for something pure and something right.
I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man.
I want freedom! That's what I want! And that's what you should want!
You're listening to Alex Jones.
The truth is out there in front of you. Let me lay out this buffet of lies. I'm sick of it, and I'm not going to take a bite out of it!
AlexJonesLive.com. Tomorrow's news today. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from Freedom Command Central, it's the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex Jones. And folks, we are rapidly approaching Independence Day. July 4th is right around the corner. Don't wait to go to thealexjonesstore.com and get your patriotic merchandise. We have an entire line of shirts specifically to celebrate America's 250th birthday. Limited edition 4th of July apparel now on sale at thealexjonesstore.com. You don't want to show up at the July 4th barbecue wearing some old ratty patriotic shirt. You're going to want the finest, nicest, most well-made apparel out there, and you can get it at thealexjonesstore.com. This collection right now is 30% off. Order it now to get it by Independence Day and remind people that, yes, America has gone a little bit off the rails, okay? I'm the first to admit it. We're not in the best situation that we've ever been in before, but the promise of America, the promise of 1776 is still alive and well and thriving here in these little pockets of patriotism you can find at the Alex Jones Network, alexjonesstore.com is where you go to support us, keep us on the air, and let everyone know we aren't down and out yet. We're not even down. We're just waiting. We're just waiting to truly come to our own and manifest our destiny once and for all. The fight goes on, and you can help wage it by going to thealexjonesstore.com. Now, we still have a lot to cover today. We're going to continue with the war in Iran. We've got major developments between Ukraine and Russia that I want to get into, as well as other stories like Chud the Builder and what's going on in the UK, as we covered a lot yesterday. I want to touch on that and some new developments that have occurred since then. We'll do that in the next hour, because this hour, I'm very happy and proud to be welcoming Brandon J. Weikert. He is the senior national security editor at 1945.com. That's 1945.com. You spell out 45, but 19 are the numbers. 1945.com. He also manages the Weikert Brief on Substack. He hosts National Security Talk on Rumble. And he's the author of four best-selling national security books, the most recent of which is A Disaster of Our Own Making, How the West Lost Ukraine. Brandon Weikert occasionally serves as a consultant for the United States Department of the Air Force and is a former congressional staffer. And you, of course, have probably seen him all over X, as his profile has massively expanded during the conflict in Iran, because he only seems to be one of the only analysts out there who can actually figure out what's going on and tell us the truth about things. It's a shockingly rare character to have, but we appreciate it. Brandon Weikert, follow him on X at WeTheBrandon, Weikert.substack.com. Brandon, welcome back to the show, sir.
Oh, thank you. It's a very high honor. I was pleasantly surprised this morning when I saw the Oracle of Austin himself, that Alex Jones followed me on Twitter. I felt like I finally made it, now that he's following me.
Long overdue. That's long. That must have been an oversight, because you've been coming on our show for years, and we've always
years.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we've always appreciated your analysis.
Oh, no, I'm very honored. I'm very honored.
Well, it's great. Well, and I've just been, you know, gratified to see more people recognizing that, that you know what's going on and have, you know, a valuable insight into, the geopolitical world. I'm a little jealous because, you know, it was ours for a little. You would come on our show all the time. Now you're going on Steve Bannon and all these other people. I saw you on Mario Knopfall the other day. I mean, just incredible
stuff.
I'm
a regular
now. Well, it's great to see. So obviously we've been, hoping for an end to the war in Iran. And I've been cautiously optimistic about this memorandum of understanding. Then I'm scrolling your timeline yesterday, and I saw you say something like, I don't think this is going to hold. And I thought, well, dang it, he's probably right. What is your reading on the memorandum of understanding? Where does it go from here? Just take it away, sir.
Well, I will say, I'll start on the optimistic side. I will say I was actually kind of happy when I found out that they had lied or misdirected the public. The Trump administration had, you know, they said they signed electronically the document on Sunday. In reality, they signed it, ironically, in Versailles yesterday. Now, obviously, symbolism aside, the fact is, though, I think the reason that they misdirected everybody is because they were trying to keep the Israelis off their back.
Right.
Because, you know, the Israelis, if they had known, I think, when exactly the MOU was signed and, you know, the details, they weren't letting the details out either. Had the Israelis gotten hold of that information, they would have used it. They would have weaponized it in the American media, to try to, you know, scupper the talks. And in fact, I was told it sounds like on Friday in Switzerland, Vance will still be meeting with the Iranians, but apparently it will be to discuss actually sort of the outlines of a real lasting deal. That's optimistic. That indicates to me maybe there is some hope there, from what, you know, I found this out in the last 12 hours. Ultimately though, I do think that the problem here is this is not a two-party deal. This is a, three-party deal. This is the United States, Iran, and Israel. And two of the parties, United States and Iran, are kind of on the same page, kind of. But the wild card, as always, is our friends in the Netanyahu government. And, I can assure you there is no way, just judging on what the representatives in the American media of the Netanyahu government, the unofficial representatives, the supporters, the neoconservatives, Ben Shapiro, Mark Levin, all those people, Bhatia, they're all kind of whinging endlessly and screaming like stuck pigs at the idea that we have some temporary ceasefire. That indicates to me that this is too significant for the Israeli government to just let pass. And so that's why I say at some point, because what we know is that the way you kind of get the Americans to go in the direction you want is you wait them out, right? We don't do well long term. So once this news cycle switches over to something else, once we go through the midterms, and Mark Levin tweeted that this morning, which is the tell. I think the play now is let the Americans get their 60-day MOU. They'll probably not be able to get a full deal after the 60 days. They'll probably have to do a 30 to 60-day extension. And in that window then, once the midterms are over, I believe the Israelis will, I think we'll be sucked back into a war again. That's my fear.
Well, that's been my fear as well. I mean, we know the Israeli goals have not been achieved yet, and they see this as an existential crisis.
And they
crisis.
Never will be.
Well, right. Certainly not without American boots on the ground, you know, taking out Iran and going in and seizing the material or whatever else, which doesn't seem like it's on the table anymore. This has to come to a head at a certain point, right? I mean, they're continuing their operations in Lebanon. Iran is going to respond, I would think, at a certain point. I mean, is that going to be the crisis moment? I mean, it's incompatible. You got, as you point out, these multiple parties that are totally at odds. This is a very unstable structure that we're dealing with. It's going to collapse at a certain point. I see it as an inevitability. What is going to be that ultimate crisis, do you think?
Well, I think it's going to revolve around whatever Israel's planning to do. I mean, remember, I was told by Jack Maxey on Monday that apparently the Israeli settlers are instituting or engaging in what amounts to a pogrom against the Palestinians of the West Bank.
Right.
Because they're irate over the proposed deal between the U.S. and Iran. So they're taking it out on the Palestinians in the West Bank. You know, the Israeli government has said the situation in Gaza is not that, you know, their operations are not fully over there. The Israelis this morning, or morning in the United States, they just officially declared the 10-kilometer rather, exclusion zone that they've created in southern Lebanon, which of course is a non-starter for the Iranians. So you're already seeing sort of the development of how things are going to go over the next 6 to 8 months, which is that whatever happens in terms of settling the hostilities now, it's a temporary long-term ceasefire at best. We will be engaging in, because the Israelis are not going to drop this, and they need America, as you say, unless the U.S. government is going to actually start, you know, conditioning our aid to them with tangible reciprocity in the form of Israel will listen to us when we say don't do X, Y, or Z. Until that day happens, and Congress can't do it, and I don't think Trump can do it either. Until that day happens, the Israelis will continue to have their way at the end of the day.
Yeah, I know.
And,
I know.
And you know what? Hold on. I'm sorry. Let me just say the trigger. The Iranians don't even have to respond militarily to any provocation by the Israelis, because the Iranians have figured out that the key center of gravity is the Strait of Hormuz. And the way you get Israel to stop is to pressure the Americans. And the way you pressure the Americans is not militarily. It's the economics. And that's in the Strait. Sorry for cutting you off, but that's what I wanted to end with.
Well, no, I was just agreeing with you. When it comes to the Strait of Hormuz, I mean, that was my interpretation as well. I think a couple weeks ago, Goldman Sachs came out with a thing saying basically mid-June is when we see the cutoff of our ability to absorb this economic downturn. And any point after, you know, mid-June, we really have to open up the Strait or else it's going to get bad. And so, you know, a couple weeks ago, I sort of, and I wish I had the clip, but it was just an offhanded remark. I just went, okay, so it looks like mid-June, the war's going to end, because that's the economic reality. So that's really what's dictating this pause right now, right? And it does feel like a pause. It's not technically one, but it feels like a pause out of necessity because of the economic reality. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're 100% correct. In fact, Trump at the press conference yesterday, after the signing ceremony, he said, he confirmed my reporting. I had said this back in March. He confirmed that, you know, if we kept the war going in 4 weeks, our buffers were going to be basically depleted. Buffers are basically what they call the strategic reserve of petroleum products here in the United States. We're at the lowest with our strategic petroleum reserve, the SPR. It's the lowest it's been since the Reagan administration, which is when it was initiated. So, you know, the reason we have an SPR is not to keep prices down during an economic crisis. That is what it has become used for, but it's strategic. It's not economic. It's strategic. It's in the name. That's because in the event of a major geopolitical war or crisis, if we get cut off from foreign sources of energy, we can backfill that with whatever's in the reserve. Well, now that's pretty much gone. So you're right. The depletion of not only the SPR, but also the unsung part, which is where I think is really the reason why we pulled back. We have basically cannibalized as many munitions from Indo-PACOM and from UCOM as we can. There's basically the cupboards are bare. The defense industrial base needs a lot of time to catch up, to even have a chance at catching up. So they can't keep running the war if these 14 key standoff precision guided munitions and defense interceptor munitions are either depleted or so depleted that you know, they might as well be empty. So we have those two factors, I think, are really the reason. And Mark Levin today kind of let the cat out of the bag, because I think Mark Levin is more connected with this administration than we want to think he is. He tweeted out about, you know, maybe we should just wait until after the midterms. That way the stockpiles are replenished and the SPR has a little bit more wiggle, has a little bit more in it, and there's a little bit more economic wiggle room. Maybe that's what Trump is doing. I don't think that's maybe at all. I'm worried that's exactly what's going on here.
Yeah, that would make sense. And again, it's just the reality. It's the economic reality, or it's the reality of the munitions. It's not really an option for us to continue, which is what makes their outrage so absurd. You know, I'm just reading some of the headlines or some of the statements. Mark Levin, raging over Trump's Iran deal, struggles to contain his contempt, you know, basically saying he's chickened out.
That is the silver lining in this whole experience, is watching Mark Levin and Ben Shapiro and Bhatia Bhatia literally said she doesn't understand how a small waterway mining it could stymie the sole remaining superpower. It's like, dude, you've never read a book, obviously. Like, this is the people who are leading us and are our thought leaders, and they don't know anything, and they're emotional, too. It's actually somewhat gratifying to watch them scream like this.
And it's ironic, isn't it, that they've been calling us panickins and saying we're not loyal MAGA, and it's like, well, how the tables have turned, huh?
New MAGA, turns out it's really just Never Trumpers.
Right. And it's not like Trump has betrayed them. He just isn't, committing suicide on behalf of them. And that is enough for them to be outraged by this.
Exactly. Because they're fanatics. That's the key thing. We're dealing with, we talk a lot about the jihadis and the fanaticism of, whether it's the Islamic Republic or if it's Al-Qaeda or ISIS. And they're in their own right, have their own craziness, obviously. But the Zionists are crazy, too. There's something about that part of the world where you have the two sides of the extremes, and we're stuck right in the middle, which is not where we should want to be.
Well, and that's a historical thing as well. I mean, you read history, and for better or for worse, and there are times where it's necessary, the Jewish people tend to be some of the most extreme ever, yeah. Right? And it's the thing that made them strong, but it's also, caused some trouble. I mean, read accounts of Romans or Greeks or whoever. They're like, all we did was ask to put a simple statue in and they burned the whole city down. I mean, there's a streak of that. And again, it's not, it's not something that defines their character, every one of them. But as much as we talk about Islamic extremists, we got a Jewish extremist problem here too. And by the way, I read the story earlier. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but it goes to what you were saying about what's going on in West Bank. The headline from Haaretz: the state of Israel is waging an orderly and funded campaign of ethnic cleansing and a crime against humanity. Yeah. That was written by the former Israeli prime minister. So Israel itself is having trouble dealing with the extremism in their own government. This is not a
controversial thing. Well, and the Netanyahu government has unleashed this. This is being promoted by the Netanyahu government. And, the really shameful thing here is the United States is clearly not even willing to contemplate, saying, okay, if you're going to do this, we may not be able to stop you, but we're not going to give you the money and the weapons and the materials anymore. That's not even on the table, which is, why I am getting skeptical that this is a real deal. We have no control whatsoever over the Netanyahu government.
Right. Well, and let me ask you this. What is a memorandum of understanding? Am I at it? Because, you're the expert here, but I've studied history a lot. I've never heard of a memorandum of understanding when it comes to closing a war. There's peace treaties, there's ceasefires. Memorandum of understandings, I've only ever heard of them. Actually, when you read Art of the Deal, Trump talks about memorandums of understanding, because if he has a building he wants to buy, he would get the owner to sign a memo saying, hey, I'll give you the first. Like, that's what a memo of understanding is. What is this? Is this a normal thing? Am I just out of the loop here?
It's something governments do. Usually it's for arms sales and things like that. Like, we'll have an MOU with Saudi Arabia saying that they will purchase X amount of F-35s from us on this timeline for this price. It's usually for sort of transactional things like that. The MOU is really, it's a very interesting move. I personally think it's another sign that this is not serious. The MOU is basically saying it's an agreement to have an agreement that, okay, we're going to stop fighting. We're going to kind of reset, go back to our neutral corners. And in the course of this 60-day window, we're going to try to create the conditions that will allow for meaningful dialogue at the end of those 60 days. But, we're not going to be able to get meaningful dialogue, I don't think, because the Iranians are not on the same page with us. We're not on the same page with the Iranians, and the Israelis are on the wrong page with everybody. And as long as that condition persists, this is all just a 60-day window. It's as I keep saying, it's a non-ceasefire or a non-war war.
Right. That's exactly what it is. It's a war that's not really a war. It's a ceasefire. That doesn't mean anybody's ceasing firing at any point. I mean, it's all kind of crazy.
And as far as I know, no ships have passed through the Strait of Hormuz in the last 24 hours.
Oh, really? There were headlines. I believe a couple have.
The first day, a handful got out. And by the way, they had to use the traffic separation scheme, the TSS, that the Iranians created, which is another symbol that at the end of the 60-day window, no matter what, the Iranians are going to start charging tolls. So, but, my understanding is in the last 24 hours, and maybe this has changed, But this morning when I checked, they've not let any more ships through since that first day. And it was only a handful of ships that used the TSS that Iran created.
So, you know, obviously this war has had very changeable goals. And I mean, it's all kind of, you know, again, it's just impossible to
it's a nihilist's war.
Yeah, it's sort of whatever you want it to be, right? It's like, is it a war? If you want it to be, sure it is. If it's not, then no. It's like, it totally subjective, I guess. But like pulling out and going, okay, have we achieved anything of what we set out to achieve? It doesn't seem like we have. I mean, it seems like the Strait of Hormuz will be in the hands of Iran. They'll be able to charge tolls. That was not the situation before the war. I mean, just lay out sort of the situation before the war, where we are now and what this means.
Okay, so one of the reasons we were told we went to war, and this was a problem, was not only the nuclear weapons program, which was never their primary threat. The Iranian primary threat was always their ballistic missile and drone and hypersonic weapons capability. So one of the things that they told us is, well, we had to do this because we not only had to deal with the nukes, which I was told was totally obliterated last year, but they said, oh, we got it. We got to knock out their missile capability. That's the threat. Well, Trump announced yesterday at the press conference they get to keep all their missiles and their drones. This was, by the way, 20 days after Hegseth Pollyanna Pete came out and said, we completely annihilated their missile capability. And then the IC, the intelligence community, had to come out a few weeks ago and say, actually, we only got maybe 40 to 50% of their missiles, and we don't even know if that's accurate. Oh, so we didn't achieve that goal. We are not getting the blessed nuclear dust. That's not coming out. The Iranians did say they would basically blend the uranium that they have to make it not weapons grade, but they're keeping it, which is not something we wanted them to do originally. Like you said, they're going to be, at some point, they're going to toll the Strait of Hormuz, and they're splitting control over it with Oman. Basically, we have the Iranian Navy, the Iranian Air Force, such as they are, remain intact for the most part. That's another lie that we were told, that they was destroyed. They have not destroyed those fully. The underground bunkers, which is where the real power of Iran's military derives. They have hidden industrial centers underground. They have command and control. They have, you know, who knows how many weapons down there. Nothing we have short of a nuke, and even then it might not work. Nothing we have conventionally can collapse those tunnel networks. We have not achieved. Oh, and then Hezbollah. You know, one of the things was we got to get them to stop supporting Hezbollah and to a lesser degree Hamas. Well, the Iranians announced the axis of resistance is now becoming a formal concept, which is why they're insisting that Israel and Lebanon has to be included in this MOU. So what that tells me, oh, there's Alex. So what that tells me is basically what the document we're signing, such as it is basically a conditional surrender document to the Iranians. It is not a win. The United States has been defeated at the strategic level. It's a new Middle East now.
Yeah, and it feels like we're having trouble coming to terms with that as a country. It seems like we don't actually know how to handle this new situation, which, again, it's like people like you and I have – I mean, what other outcome could there have been? They had the ability to shut down the strait. I mean, this was just sort of a mathematical reality, no matter how you slice it. So why did they choose?
Well, we're not
to
very
do
good
this?
At math in America. So
that's what it is. We're getting worse, apparently. We'll be back in just a minute. We got to take a quick commercial break. We'll return with Brandon Weichert. He is my guest, 1945.com. That's 19 and then the words 45.com. The Weichert brief on Substack can be found at weichert.substack.com. You can follow him on X at WeTheBrandon. And I want to play a couple clips for you on the other side. We'll get some Mark Levin, maybe some Tucker Carlson. I want your input.
I'll have to turn my volume down for Levin.
Yeah, we might have to. We'll pick and choose. I won't overload you. But when you talk about nuclear weapons, he's bringing up that, hey, Israel's got these nuclear weapons. Maybe it's time to use them. Is that a possibility? We'll discuss on the other side with Brandon Weichert. Stay tuned. It's the Alex Jones Show, alexjoneslive.com. Share that link, folks, and we'll be right back. Tell your friends, and you can get Alex to the Alex Jones app as well, alexjonesapp.com. You know, especially you young people, the Zoomers listening to me, go help your grandparents. I literally, when I was in Colorado, was like installing the app on my grandmother's phone, doing the shortcut to the Rumble channel so she could always find the live stream. Technology's moving. We're moving with it, and we got to make sure to pull everybody along with us. And of course, you can support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. We have incredible products there. I'm kind of a kind of a sucker for all of the products that we have at thealexjonesstore.com because they're all awesome. And it's like, it's not a thing I'm getting paid to do, right? Like, I could always carry around my old wallet, but I got the new wallet because it's so awesome and I've been so happy with it the entire time. Now we have these premium nylon tactical belts available at thealexjonesstore.com. They're only $39.99 and they are of equivalent design, quality, standards, aesthetics, just amazing stuff. You will never be disappointed with the quality of items at thealexjonesstore.com. Whether it's the supplements or the gear like this, it's always top-notch, just like we try to keep our coverage always top-notch. Might be an ironic thing to say for a belt that has no notches. It is a heavy-duty nylon webbing with smooth automatic ratchet buckle, so there's no holes, no notches, no guessing, no too tight or too loose. You just adjust it to exactly where you want it, and it stays there. You get a perfect micro-adjustable fit, whether you're out working, carrying, driving, sitting at your desk, or on the move. We've got three unique designs, the Cross Edition, the 1776 Edition, and the Alex Jones Signature Edition. You can get each one of these for under $40, but for a limited time, you can get all three designs bundled together for only $99. If you want my advice, they make fantastic gifts, so if you want one, go ahead and get all three, and then give your least favorite two out as gifts. Or heck, buy six and give three of them out as gifts. And, of course, the America 250 Birthday Limited Edition 4th of July Apparel Sale is on. Folks, 4th of July is coming up quick. You're not going to want to be out there wearing, like, a purple shirt, right? You're going to want to be decked out head to toe in the most patriotic gear you can find. And the best place to get it, hands down, is thealexjonesstore.com. This collection right now is 30% off. So, again, you're running out of time to get this before July 4th, so it's delivered, and you can wear it with pride on Independence Day, coming up very, very quickly. Go now, thealexjonesstore.com. Check out the America 250 Limited Edition 4th of July Apparel Collection. It's 30% off right now. We also have gravity-fed water filter systems back in stock because we are, at the end of the day, but humble water filter salesmen here trying to both provide, because it's always the way we've been. You've got to not just combat this stuff at the political level, you've got to protect yourself in the meantime. In other words, they put chemicals in the water. We want to be activists. We want to be protesters. We want to be running for office to get that changed, to get the stuff removed from the water. In the meantime, filter your water. It goes like that. Destroying Tyranny Since 1776, Betsy Ross snake t-shirt. It's like, how many band logos can you put on a single shirt? How many logos that would get you kicked out of the U.S. military or investigated by the FBI can we put on a shirt? Because believe it or not, that is the state of freedom of this in this country, at least a few years ago. Do you remember there was a serial, like a list of symbols that had been banned by the U.S. Army for, you know, extremist ties? Embrace freedom and our symbols and our history unapologetically, proudly, and by going to thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, alexjoneslive.com is tomorrow's news today.
The Patriots' choice and globalists' dread. Welcome to the Alex Jones Show.
This is the Alex Jones Show, alexjoneslive.com. Follow us at AJN Live on X, where we stream daily. Also on Rumble, rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. I'm here with Brandon Weikert. You can follow him at on X at wethebrandonweikert.substack.com, as well as 1945.com. He also hosts National Security Talk on Rumble. Lots of ways to find him, and of course, he's the author of four best-selling national security books, the most recent of which is called The Disaster of Our Own Making, How the West Lost Ukraine. And there's been some developments in Ukraine that, if we have time, I'd love to get your input on, but obviously yeah. This story of the day is this MOU and the reaction, the apoplectic reaction might be a good way of putting it, from the likes of Mark Levin. I got about 10 clips of Mark Levin.
Let me just turn it down so my ears don't bleed from him screaming.
I know. Well, this one's a little bit caught. I'll play one. Let's play one, because I think this one does a good job of the sense I get is like
an insane person that's been backed into a corner and that it like has a gun and is like, I'm willing to use it. I mean, that's, it's like you're, we're dealing with a very dangerous rabid dog here that like will bite you. It, like it's pretty crazy. It's clip 22. I want to get Brandon's comment on the other side. Here's Mark Levin yesterday talking about the open secret of Israel's nukes. Yeah, turn it down a little bit, Brandon. Here's Mark Levin.
I strongly disagree with something the president said today. I heard him say one other time, too, which is if we hadn't attacked Iran, Israel would not exist. It would have been destroyed. That's simply not true. It's simply not true. For 12 days, Israel fought a year ago against the Iranian regime before we did. Destroyed its ground-to-air missiles, destroyed its Soviet and slash Russian radar systems, destroyed much of its air force, destroyed much of any of its defenses. For 12 days. We went in on the 13th day with our great bombers and those bombs, and we hit those nuclear sites. But Israel has some very, very powerful weapons that it has not used. I don't know this firsthand. Just go online and read about it. It's a secret that's not so secretive. And they've had them for decades. Israel will survive. Period.
All right. So there's Mark Levin, the American that's not so American, talking about the secret nukes that aren't so secret to make a subtle threat that's not so subtle. So, you know, obviously he's like, oh, you want to back off on supporting us? I guess we'll have to nuke Iran, which they already, you know, Pakistan's already said that they would respond. I mean, that is this even a possibility, Brennan? I mean, nuclear weapons flying out of Israel?
It's always a possibility when the Israelis have, the government has convinced itself that, you know, the next great genocide is upon them. And this is, you know, if you believe that the last 70 years was merely an interruption of what the Nazis began with the Holocaust, this is what the Israelis teach their people.
Yeah.
If you believe the only 70 years, the only reason there hasn't been another one is because of your strength and the fact that you don't compromise with anybody around you, and that you're going to dictate terms, then yeah, if you're in a pickle like they are right now, and make no mistake, both we and the Israelis are in a very serious strategic pickle, then yeah, the Israelis will certainly, that's on the table. You know, the Israelis are sending signals, I think, through their intermediaries. And let's face it, Mark Levin, he may have an American passport and he may have worked for the Justice Department at one time, which is shocking in and of itself. But doesn't sound like an American. And if you listen to what he said, basically what he said is the 12 day war for the 12 days. It was the Israelis doing all the work and then the Americans just came in at the last minute and, you know, that he was really downplaying what we did. What the Trump administration did was it put American lives and American high-end technology on the line to try to stop what was becoming very clearly a larger regional war, because by the time the American bombs dropped in July or June of last year over Iran, the Iranians had adapted to the initial shock that the Israelis subjected them to, and the Iranian counter response was getting exponentially worse for Israel, and the Israelis were not stopping. So the Israeli, Trump actually probably saved Israel last year from a conventional defeat with the 12-day war bomb drops that he did. But that wasn't enough, of course. And you see the Levin, the way he acts and what he says, there's a psyche here. There's a pattern of personality here that the Israeli side is demonstrating, which is that they are not going to drop this because for them, this is existential. I don't think it needs to be existential, but, you know, this is what they've convinced themselves of. And therefore, yeah, the nuclear issue is always on the table. But what people should be asking right now is not only whether Iran has nukes, because I actually think they probably do have some capability that they're not sharing, and they're keeping it in reserve, but also, like you mentioned, Pakistan. Pakistan has more than enough nukes to annihilate really the entire Middle East if it wanted to, and they have already extended their nuclear umbrella over Saudi Arabia last year, and they have made indications that they're willing to do the same for the Iranians if it means that they can get peace in the Middle East. So, yeah, the nuclear card, this is not just a, you know, crazy man on Fox News boomering out. This is a guy who represents, I think, Israeli interests on some level, either directly or indirectly, speaking for them, and letting everybody know that, hey, this is what's going to happen if we don't get our way.
Yeah, and again, I've never seen this as an existential threat of Israel. I mean, it seems to me like the demand the whole time has been, hey, stop murdering people in Gaza, stop trying to take over Lebanon, and it's like that is seen as an existential threat. If they stop doing that, it's like it's over. But this was never, this was never a question of Israel's survival. It was Israel's freedom of action, right? They get to do what they want.
Right.
And God forbid anybody try to stop them. By the way, it's not just you saying that Mark Levin is very clearly an unofficial spokesman for the Israeli government. From Alex Brusewitz, I never know how to pronounce his last name. Brusewitz. Yeah. There you go.
I think it's Brusewitz, I think. I don't know him.
Alex Brusewitz. But, you know, he's in the White House. He says, hello, Mark Levin Show. An Israeli source confirmed to the Times of Israel that the Israeli government will be using you and other right-wing media figures to try to influence the president's deal. Can you confirm or deny? So in the Times of Israel, it says, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu plans to use pro-Israel senators and right-wing media personalities to influence the deal of a final agreement between the United States and Iran. Netanyahu believes the final deal with Iran will be secured, but that Tehran will not fulfill its obligations under the agreement. He plans to use media figures such as Fox News's Mark Levin and pro-Israel politicians to get his message to Trump. So he sees Mark Levin as an Israeli asset in America.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, remember, he did that long sit-down interview recently with Levin. I mean, that's usually when a leader sits down that long with a foreign broadcaster, it's because they've done enough vetting to determine this person is friendly, you know, won't push too hard and make the leader look bad. So that is clearly on display here. I think Mark Levin is the ringleader for all of these right-wing, so-called right-wing American spokespeople, basically. You know, these are PR flacks. They're pushing Netanyahu's line here in the United States. I'll also remind one thing about what we were talking about just now with the nuclear issue. Jonathan Pollard, who's now running for the Knesset in Israel, the guy who was an American naval intelligence officer who stole our secrets and gave it to Israel, our nuclear weapons secrets in the Cold War. He's living in Israel, not running for Knesset. He said in an interview about a year ago that he knows for a fact one of the reasons the Americans supported the Israelis, I think in the 73 war, was because the Israelis told the Americans if they didn't receive the aid they needed to fight the Arabs, they were going to launch nuclear weapons at the Arab states. And, Yeah, and with this pressure that they can exert, it's undue pressure. You're talking about the Russians having all this supposed influence and the Russia collusion thing and all that. Well, the real influence is not Russia. It's not RT. It's all of these people who all say the same thing that is not just pro-Israel. It's clearly Israeli.
Right.
And they're sitting at their primetime shows knowing they have an audience of one, which is Donald Trump.
Right. And we've heard, Joe Kent said something similar. That's almost a Truman Show creation where the TV, they know which TV shows he watches. So, you know, get your message to that TV show, have the people around him, you know, saying that same message. So from every angle, it seems like it's coming from all these different directions, but really it's all being coordinated and directed at President Trump. It's sort of fascinating when you really think about it.
Well, and they did this to George W. Bush too. I don't know if you remember this, but the patterns are so obviously similar. And it's always when there's a Republican, because the GOP is way more exposed to this level of influence, unfortunately, than are the Democrats. I mean, the Democrats are exposed too, but the Christian Zionist side is really the Republican Party. If you remember in 04, 05, Newsweek and all of these publications were accusing Bush of living in his bubble, the news media bubble. Well, what was he listening to? He wasn't listening to any of the news. He was listening to Bill Kristol's publication, The Weekly Standard. He was listening to Fox News, Bill O'Reilly. All of these people were saying the Israeli line, and it created this feedback loop around George W. Bush, which is one of the reasons why George W. Bush's presidency was completely destroyed in 2003. I mean, he wasn't listening to any alternative opinion except Bill Kristol and people like that.
And, of course, the insulting thing to me is that now, of course, you know, the Shapiros and the Mark Levins are turning against Trump. But up until now, it's been they've been presenting this as if it's for America and this is pro-America. And, of course, you know, everybody's making fun of the gigantic, you know, American flag pin that seems to get bigger every time Mark Levin does a show. And I saw this meme. Somebody posted it. This person at Liberty Mama 888 on X. And I've just it's every time I see Mark Levin, I cannot help but think about this meme. And it's basically Mark Levin in all these different costumes. If we can go to dot cam, I just think this is how I see Mark Levin. It's got Mark Levin USA with the American flag saying we must stand with Israel. Or if he was in the UK, he'd be decked out in the British flag and he'd be saying we must stand with Israel, Germany, Canada, France, UAE. It's like it wouldn't be any different, would it? If he was in Germany right. or France or yeah. Canada, it has nothing to do with America. It's whoever, you know, he has an influence on, you have to support Israel.
It's using the United States. It's hijacking and using the United States to achieve the strategic ends, not even of Israel. It's the strategic ends and the desires of Netanyahu and the Likud party.
Right.
That's specifically what this is. Because there's about 20% of Israelis are not fully on board with what's going on. But it is a large number of Israelis who are totally fine with what Netanyahu's doing. They may not like Netanyahu, but they're totally fine with what's going on. And that's what's happening here. And I would just also as a sidebar here, relatedly, China, there is a large and growing Zionist presence in Macau, which is really where the action is in the gambling world. It isn't Las Vegas anymore. Macau's where it's at. And the Adelson family, and, you know, Miriam Adelson has a lot of influence here in the United States, but because she has that casino empire in Macau, you know, I think that's a backdoor. They're trying to somehow co-opt who they can in China as well. And if I were the Chinese, I would say, let's get that casino out of there because this is a real threat to the sovereignty of other countries, this backdooring. Where they hijack the next great powers of the world to try to get them to always toe the line.
And look, you know how China behaves when it comes to billionaires or anybody else. If they think that it's not good for the good of the Chinese people, they'll take it. They'll throw you in jail. I mean, if they thought that it was a bad thing to have Miriam Adelson running casinos in Macau, they'd take it from her. They'd say, well, these are ours now. You need to get out of here. And there'd be very little she could do about it, except for maybe pressure America to intervene on her behalf. But
right. You
got to wonder, why are they willing to be the place where she makes all of her money, knowing that, you know, she is such a big supporter of supposedly their biggest geopolitical enemy?
It's very concerning.
It is.
It's very concerning. I mean, we really don't understand. This is a transnational problem. I don't want to say threat, but it's a problem. It could become a threat, but ultimately, you know, Israel, it's fine. They do whatever they're going to do, but they don't get to dictate to us as well, right? It's they're their own country. We're our own country. I don't wish them any harm, but it's like, you have your side. I have my side. Don't come on my side. That's the way I view this.
Well,
and they've been coming on our side a little too much.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, now, you know, going back to sort of one of the first things you said during this interview, about the idea that, you know, if Israel knew about the MOU, if they knew the timing of when it was going to be signed or who was negotiating it, they would almost certainly intervene, as they have multiple times during this war, when we're negotiating with somebody and suddenly Israel kills them and, you know, we're out of luck, or we're trying to make an agreement and they bomb Lebanon. I mean, they've really destroyed our chance for peace over and over again, to the point where we're having to do this like shell game and hide it from them. And then they're coming out and going, Israel asked to see the MOU and they won't let us see it. And it's like, well, yeah, because you would have leaked it to the press to try to scuttle it. And then you've got Tom Cotton and others, you know, in Congress putting forward these bills to essentially merge American and Israeli intelligence sharing. If that had already passed, then this MOU would have been, by law, had to be shared with Israel. And there would be no way for us to, you know, prevent them from getting access to that information. So, I mean, how dangerous are these bills that are seeking to merge the American and the Israeli intelligence communities?
Oh, I mean, it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. I mean, so you're talking about So there are two bills right now, one that came out of the Senate and it passed at the end of May. I don't know. It's now going through the next process, but it got out of the Senate. It's the Intelligence Authorization Act, which Section 622, I've been doing a breakdown of it on my Substack for the last 2 weeks. But Section 622 is the real kind of kicker. That's the one everybody kind of missed because everybody was focused on the National Defense Authorization Act coming out of the House with Section 224, where Section 224 was saying they're going to merge the defense industrial bases with the United States and Israel. That's what everybody was focused on. But the real one was Section 622 of the Intelligence Authorization Act. Yep. And that was the one that said, basically, we're going to elevate Israel's intelligence service from a transactional limited partner to a fully fledged, fully trusted partner on the same level as Britain, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. The Five Eyes is what they're called. And basically, it would be an open kimono. We would basically give them any intelligence. They wouldn't even have to ask. They could just access the systems, get what they needed, and do whatever the hell they wanted to. And I will tell you, I've talked to Sam Faddis. I've talked to Larry Johnson. I've talked to Mike Scheuer. I've talked to John Kiriakou. What do all these guys have in common? They're all CIA guys, and they all worked the Middle East portfolio at some point. And all of them independently told me that yes, whenever Israel did gain access to intelligence from us, whenever we did share it, almost invariably they weaponized that intelligence and used it in a way that benefited them and harmed the operation against usually Al-Qaeda that we were trying to partner with them on, because they had other mission sets they were trying to do. Another story that I was told by somebody who was U.S. Army intelligence retired was that while they were in the Sunni Triangle region of Iraq during the war, their intelligence team was aware of a Mossad cell operating in their AOR. And the only reason they figured it out is because this group of Mossad agents was helping Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And that's all they would tell me. They didn't want to get into anything more detailed than that. But there is a pattern here, and we saw this with Jonathan Pollard, where the intelligence he stole from us was given to Israel, and Israel leveraged that intel to get what they wanted out of the Soviets, sacrificing our strategic interests and security in the process. So this is a pattern, and now what we're doing is we're removing any safeguards and telling Israelis it's open kimono, have whatever you want, have your way with the intelligence process. And also, the reason Congress and the Senate are passing these dual bills is to restrain the future freedom of action of a given president. Right now, a lot of our aid, a lot of our intel sharing is at the executive level, which means if a given president says, I don't like what Israel's doing, they can cut it off or dial it back or whatever. Congress wading into this, they're saying future presidents are not going to be able to interfere with the free flow of technology, of industrial, you know, whatever deals they're doing, or with intelligence sharing with Israel ever again.
It's just incredibly dangerous. And we don't need to play the clip, but I do have a clip of Tucker Carlson, you know, essentially saying not only is Israel not really a great ally, they're actually kind of our opponent in a lot of these situations. I mean, they have interests that are at odds with ours, and they have no compunction about sacrificing, you know, our well-being for their own. And I think more and more people are coming around to that idea, which makes it really the height of absurdity that we're attempting to pass these bills right now that would make the merger complete. It is absolutely.
Well, it makes perfect sense because of how much they've captured. Yes, it is. But it makes perfect sense too. How efficiently they've captured from the 1960s onward. The it started out as a drip, 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 and now it's a flood. They've captured the entire political process.
Yep.
And you know, I don't want to get too far down this rabbit hole, but I'm starting to wonder if, like, the Russia collusion scandal was not actually Russia, quote unquote, but it was Israel.
Sure.
And I'm starting to wonder if the, you know, we know the Hunter Biden scandal, he claimed that he was duped by Russian prostitutes, yet all of those Russian prostitutes were Israelis. So I don't want to get too far down that, but I think that there's something much deeper and darker going on, and I don't know if it's the Russians. I think it might actually be our greatest ally.
Yeah, our so-called greatest ally. Well, and to sort of connect it to Ukraine, they're trying to do in a more comprehensive and permanent way what Ukraine did when they knew Trump was
probably going to get back into office, there was sort of a scramble to go, well, let's sign 5-year deals. So even if Trump gets into office and wants to cut it off, we'll have this deal in place that he won't be able to. So it's sort of similar to that, to where they know the executive has this ability to cut them off. And so they want to basically make it to where that's not a possibility anymore, to where it's guaranteed because they know how much control they have over Congress. And we only have about 3 minutes left, but yeah. You know, there is this development in Ukraine. They're bombing civilian buildings in Moscow. I mean, they seem hell bent on expanding and accelerating the war. I know we only have 2 minutes here, but have you looked into this and what's your update to the Ukraine-Russia war?
Yeah, well, you know, Matt Bracken put it best on my show a few weeks ago. There's only 621 miles separating the southern part of Crimea from the northern portion of Iran. So in a way, there's only a 621-mile gap between the Iran front and the Ukraine front. And I think we need to increasingly look at it as fronts of the same war.
Right.
And I actually think that the Israelis are way more involved with the Ukrainian within the Ukraine war than we're being told, not just in terms of drones and things like that. But there's a weird connectivity there between Israel and Ukraine, culturally, historically, et cetera. You know, and so it's just interesting to me, as there is a somewhat slowdown in the Iran front, suddenly now here we go kicking up the Ukraine war. My view is I think that the Ukrainians are trying to start another round of fighting, knowing that they are not going to be able to have a chance at surviving. They're going to want to see that the world to see how weak they are so that they can force NATO and the Americans to come rushing in at the 11th hour and save them from the mean old Russians. Except the problem is they don't understand. We don't have the stuff anymore. We blew it all in Iran. We've been cannibalizing the European stockpiles to send to Iran. And also, Trump does not want to be involved with a war against Russia, which means that it's going to be up to Europe. And what that means is that the Russians, if they need to, and I think they're preparing to do this, they will, with conventional weapons, attack strategic targets in Berlin, in the rest of NATO Europe, if they think that the Ukrainians are going to threaten their national sovereignty and security like they're doing in Russia.
And it seems like with everything the Europeans are doing, from, you know, writing laws to reinstitute the draft and just making ads talking about, you know, how you have a patriotic duty to sign up, you know, for the draft, or, you know, Germany is passing laws to prevent men of draft age from leaving without permission. I mean, the European leaders seem very excited about the possibility of killing their own people in a pointless front against Russia. So, you know, that conflict.
Well, they have a replacement population ready to take over anyway.
Right. So. And that's literally happening in Ukraine, where they're dragging men off the street to send to the front line while importing millions of Indians and Africans. I mean, it is beyond horrifying. Brandon Weikert, incredible.
Ireland.
As always, follow Brandon at WeTheBrandon on X, Weikert.substack.com. Thank you so much for being with us today, sir.
Thank you, as always.
As always. All right, folks, stay tuned. Final hour up next. Don't go anywhere. It's the Alex Jones Show, AlexJonesLive.com. We'll be right back.
Have the 250th birthday limited edition run of awesome designs for this July 4th, 2026 coming up. And they're now available to ship to you as of today, Monday, June 15th, 2026. And they'll be available only through July. They're limited edition, and then that's it. And they fundraise for the broadcast. But I got to say, I'm very impressed with the designs that Bigley came up with. I was heavily involved in this, and the concepts like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition with the Rattlesnake and the AR-15, Liberty or Death, 1776 to 2026. That is a really nice shirt. I designed this one, very simple. America 250 Years Strong. And these are just very clean, Americana, high-quality fabric, very comfortable. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. I did that concept. These are very, very clean. I'm proud of these. I think these are shirts everybody would want to wear. I would certainly want to wear these. America, ride fast, live free. Just a classic Betsy Ross flag. 1776 free. They came up with that. I think that's pretty cool. Defund the deep state. That's pretty cool. I like that really clean one right there. 1776, 250 years of freedom. They designed that. Very clean. Very nice. If you want nice, clean, patriotic apparel, that, you know, won't get you stabbed by a liberal, but other patriots will know who you are. You can kind of promote liberty and kind of identify who you are. It's fun to wear these shirts, I can tell you that right now. You kind of choose your own adventure. You wear an Alex Jones shirt, then you really got to meet a lot of cool people, but you also might get a bottle smashed over your head. Hundreds and hundreds of great designs from the Gulf of America to you name it. That's a good-looking shirt right there at thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, alexjoneslive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Fourth hour is on here on the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I'm going to go now to a video of Tucker Carlson talking about the proposal, the bills that we were just discussing with Brandon Weikert, the Section 622 and Section 224 by Tom Cotton and other Israel First politicians here in America to permanently and inextricably merge American and Israeli military and intelligence sharing. And, you know, when they say merge, that kind of makes it sound like we're going to have access to their stuff. I don't even think that is really part. I think it's just opening up us to them, not the other way around. I could be missing something here, but, you know, Israel doesn't tend to make those reciprocal deals. They like to get it all and provide nothing. Here's Tucker Carlson talking about these Tom Cotton introduced bills of treason. Let's watch.
Bill, or this amendment that would essentially more or less merge U.S. intelligence and Israeli intelligence by making it mandated for the
United
States.
He's the chairman of the Senate Intel Committee.
Yeah. Mandate the U.S.
One of the most evil things that's ever come out of our Congress. It's one of the most anti-American. You know, anyway. Yeah.
I encourage everyone, go to Responsible Statecraft.
What is that? What is the Tom Cotton story?
I don't know the story. I don't know exactly why he ended up. I mean, he was a protege of Bill Kristol and served in Iraq, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not really sure exactly how deep his ideological commitment to this is or if it's other reasons. But Paul Pillar, former CIA legend in many ways, someone who really stood up against the manipulation of intelligence during the Bush years, trying to get us into that Iraq war, has a fantastic piece laying out exactly what this is on responsible statecraft and showing that this is an extremely dangerous situation. And what they're trying to do, not only with that, but also with 224, is to, in which they're trying to take away the aid, because the aid is public, it's scrutinized, etc. They're all trying to do it in some sort of a procurement accounting exercise. So it will continue to happen, probably even more money for Israel, but it will all be hidden in the bureaucracy with no congressional oversight. So they're recognizing exactly what is happening. They're losing the American public, but they can use some of their last juice that they have in Washington to go push through these different reforms. And it will become a structural impediment towards the type of healthy break.
They should
healthy
be in prison.
Detachment.
They should be in prison, all of these people.
This is happening right now. So when you're saying that, look, they're losing Trump, you know, yes, you're absolutely right, but they're doing other things that will make it very difficult for future presidents and members of Congress to be able to break free from some of these things.
What? So where is this process?
It is right now in the NDAA. It's in the Senate. It's going to be voted for, if I'm not mistaken. Some parts of it has already been voted for, and now it's going to go to a final vote. And this is happening in front of
and
the American.
It's going to pass.
Most likely it will pass.
And what is it? Can you just summarize what it will mean?
Well, the intelligence part is really devastating because essentially it means that it is mandated for the U.S. to share significant amount of intelligence with the Israelis, and it can only be prevented if the president himself goes in and stops certain things. The president does not have the time, should not have the time, to micromanage the intelligence relationship.
Why would the United States share any intelligence with Israel? Why would we be required to
do that? I mean, there's always going to be sharing of intelligence, but it's going to be very careful because we will get intelligence from them. I have no idea whether
the intelligence we get from them is fundamentally untrue.
Well, that's for certain, particularly when it comes to some of the things that they try to sell us. I don't know if that relationship is sufficiently balanced, but we're making it increasingly unbalanced. And essentially saying that for something to be stopped, the president has to intervene. And this is also very problematic because it means that we would have to share intelligence about other partners that we have with the Israelis that actually could be betraying them in a way. So again, it's once again putting the relationship with Israel above all other relations that the United States
above has. All other concerns, including like the most basic concern, which is how's America doing?
Yeah.
That's subordinated to how do we support Israel?
Just absolutely absurd. It is absolutely treason. We got more treason to talk about. We're going to stop talking about Israel. We're going to stop talking about Iran. We're going to start talking about all of the other ways that our countries are being destroyed from the inside out. Stay tuned. It's the Alex Jones Show. So much work goes into this, and it's all funded by you going to thealexjonesstore.com. So this is a fundraiser time right now. We need to be raising funds because we are launching into the next stage of our, you know, rocket trip. We've shed one booster and now the new one's firing up, and we need you to fill our tank and give us the fuel to get to that next level. So please do go to thealexjonesstore.com. There is a mega sale going on right now. You're getting 40% off methylene blue tincture, methylene blue caps, Ultra DNA Revival, Shilajit caps and gummies, up to 35% off methylene red tincture, colostrum, and MK Ultra, and you're getting 30% off all apparel, shirts, hats, hoodies, and everything else. You know, what we sell you at thealexjonesstore.com are just like these amazing naturally occurring vitamins, minerals, supplements, just CMOS and Shilajit. It just is like God's gift to humanity. At some point, humanity discovers it, and get it at thealexjonesstore.com.
Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, folks. This is The Alex Jones Show. Just going through all of our non-Israel and Iran stories here. Am I crazy? I feel like I saw a headline the other day, if the crew can find it. Did a couple of Antifa get busted, like, dropping algae in the reflecting pool? Because I really haven't been following this story, but there's been this big controversy over Donald Trump repairing the reflecting pool in front of the Washington Monument and the Lincoln Monument. And you got headlines like this from Washington Post. Reflecting pool algae blooms have roared back, reaching highest levels in years. And it's like, how does that happen? You completely renovate this reflecting pool, $14 million renovation a month ago, and within a month it has more algae in it than it did before. How is that even possible? I don't even understand. And I don't understand the opposition to this. Like, all of a sudden I started seeing all these posts that were just like, Trump's stupid, idiotic plan to fix the reflecting pool. And it's like, I'm sorry, what is the issue? He wants the reflecting pool to look nice, and that makes you angry somehow? Why, though? But why? And it is one of those things, it's like, I don't know what psychological phenomenon it represents, but he's fixing the fountains in Washington, D.C. And I've been to Washington, D.C. forever. Trump wanted the reflecting pool to be American flag blue. Algae are turning it green. I swear, am I hallucinating? People got arrested for pouring algae into the pool. I swear, if the crew can't find this, I'm going to check myself into a mental facility because I'm hallucinating. I swear people were arrested. Maybe it was a Babylon Bee thing or something. I don't know. But I just saw this headline as I was going through this stack of papers talking about the algae bloom being the highest in years. And they're like CNN is going out and testing the water and getting samples and testing it for algae to prove that Trump didn't get rid of the algae. And it's like, where is this level of concern about literally any other topic? Like, what about things that matter? Do you want to go do investigations on that? No, you're not going to ever look into any of the like gigantic bombshell claims that could alter the course of our country in terms of mail-in ballot fraud or just literally anything else that requires investigative reporters to actually do the work to figure out. They're not doing any of that. They are, however,
going to the Washington reflecting pool and testing it. They say warm weather fueled the bloom. Look, I'm blaming Antifa until you can prove me otherwise. That's my position on this. It ain't natural. But it's also unnatural, their desire to live in filth. It genuinely is crazy that if you're just like, hey, you know, this giant fountain we have in the middle of the city, it should have water in it. And they're just like, what the hell is wrong with you? Why would you put water in the fountain? It's like, because it looks nice and is pretty. And they're just like, you fascist. You absolute fascist. Don't you know people are going hungry? It's like, what does that have to do with any? What are we doing here? What are we doing? This is like, it should just be bare minimum. It's like, should this not be a test of just municipal governance? That it's like, hey, that guy was in charge and the fountain started running again. Is that not just a tangible benefit that we all receive by voting for this person? And damn it, if the leftists aren't furious at this concept of beauty and cleanliness. It's just, it's anathema to everything that they believe and understand. And I lived in D.C. for a while, just every couple of months. I'd go up there for a couple of years and work on film sets. And yeah, you walk by these fountains and they're dry and empty and covered in graffiti. And you don't even think about it. Like it never even crosses your mind that like there was once water running through this. It's almost like you accept that for some reason, people in the past built these big bowls, that were empty and, you know, had like these weird metal features in them that apparently did nothing. And then like you turn the water on, it's like, oh, right. No, wait, this is supposed to be a fountain. And it's just, it's weird that like for literally years, these fountains just sit broken and just empty. And I mean, they still look nice, but they look a lot nicer if they were doing what they're supposed to do. There's another famous fountain that sort of creates kind of a river going downhill, multiple steps. And I've been to that exact place and I walked around there. It never occurred to me that it could be fixed. It just, growing up, you know, in the 2000s in America, you just kind of accept that, yeah, there's these vestiges of a once great civilization that we no longer know how to maintain. And it just never even occurs to you that it's literally a simple matter of just like telling somebody to fix it and then making sure they do. It's really not that complicated at all. And it actually makes things nicer. And you can see the images that the Trump administration has put out. And again, as much as I am angry at the Trump administration for failing to uphold their more important promises like mass deportations and getting rid of H-1B visas and, you know, all this other stuff, not getting into Middle Eastern wars, I really am upset at how things have gone off the rails. But at the same time, there are certain things that it's like, how did this not happen before? And how did we get almost lulled into this understanding that like, yeah, crime is terrible and the fountains don't work and there's homeless people on the streets and that's just the way things are. Trump comes along and goes, well, let's get the homeless people off the street. Let's get the fountain running again. Let's have a nice place to live. Yeah. What? Why not? Why are we the greatest, most prosperous, most powerful country that has ever existed in human history? By a factor of 10. I mean, even to this day, you know, sure, industrially, China's rising up, but like they don't hold a candle to what America has achieved and can achieve. And we can't keep the fountain running, really. We got wrong priorities, and that should be a priority. Yes, the aesthetic beauty of the country that we live in has a tangible and significant impact on the way people feel about our country and think about our country and just understand what is possible and what is right. It might be an older generation thing. Because I'll tell you, my grandmother is like 95 years old and she still walks up and down like 3 flights of stairs every day to get to her house on top of a mountain. Like she's so fit. And like she has a car. She has an Expedition from like 1992 and the thing runs better than my 2021 car, because something about the generation before the boomers, whoa, were they the silent generation? My grandparents' generation, they knew maintenance. And I feel like we've lost the skill of maintenance, where just like you keep things running nicely and you don't let it ever break down. And I don't know if it's a generational thing and things are just kind of cheaper now and less well made, so they break more often, and you kind of just go, well, it's not working, whatever. That's just the way it is. But like, I think we're losing the concept of like maintenance and why it's important and why you want to preserve these certain things. And the generations that came before understood that. And so they lived in a nicer and more aesthetically pleasing world and more functional world. And the fact that we can't keep our fountains running really is a symbol, a symptom of something much deeper that I'm glad Trump is facing and helping to correct. I also saw this headline. I got more important things to cover, but, you know, sometimes things pop out at you. Everyone in Trump's cabinet is eating sauerkraut. What? A new diet is sweeping through President Trump's cabinet, and it involves heaping portions of sauerkraut. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick, Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, and Vice President J.D. Vance have all embraced the diet drawn by the promise of slimmer waistlines and glowing skin. They've all apparently determined the health benefits outweigh the slightly sulfurous odors that have been the cause of some domestic friction. Tell you what, folks, maybe this is great. I wouldn't doubt it. Sauerkraut, you know, things that are fermented can be very healthy for you and give you a lot of benefits. Go to thealexjonesstore.com. Tell you what, if you're wanting to lose weight or get, you know, supplements that you might need, if you're not a big fan of sauerkraut, why don't you try some of the supplements we have at thealexjonesstore.com? I'm just saying, better skin, losing weight. We got stuff for all of it at thealexjonesstore.com. Sauerkraut might be good, but our stuff is better. I'll tell you that right now. That's what I want to say. I want to see the headline that's like, new health craze sweeps through the White House. They're all taking supplements from thealexjonesstore.com and it's having dramatic effects. Everyone in Trump's cabinet is eating Shilajit gummies. What is this stuff? Where did they get it? And why are they glowing? Why are they looking so healthy and robust? What could it be? Well, it's the Shilajit gummies. Irish sea moss. What is this craze that's sweeping the highest halls of power? Irish sea moss. Whatever could it be? You know, maybe we need sauerkraut supplements. Maybe we're missing out here. We need ultra blue sauerkraut edition or something like that. I don't know, but I'm just telling you, if you're looking for that secret fix, give sauerkraut a try. If it doesn't work out for you, might I suggest thealexjonesstore.com and the incredible array of supplements we have for all of your health needs. Unless you are a demigod, unless you are somebody that never gets tired and has perfect skin and, you know, is fit without working out. Like, if you're a human being, then there's something for you at thealexjonesstore.com. There's something that can help you either achieve your goals, whether it's weight loss or just, you know, more energy, being more healthy and active. We have water filters back in stock, the classic Alex Jones iconic product, the water filters, because once again, whether it's poisoning your mind through education designed to turn you into a obedient cog in a giant industrial machine, or the manipulation that poisons the mind of our children intellectually or physically when they're actually putting industrial waste like fluoride into your water to deliberately lower your IQ, or things like atrazine and other estrogen mimickers to deliberately lower your testosterone and feminize men. You're under attack. You're being poisoned. And the only way to deal with it is to protect yourself by filtering your water, and while doing that, to try to gain power in this country, seize it from the hateful, despotic, anti-human idiots, just set things right once again. But until we achieve that, until we crown RFK Jr., you know, king of the ecology, and give him dictatorial powers to stop children being fat. Like, until then, you got to protect yourself. You got to do your own work. You got to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Support us. Support yourself. Make yourself healthy, happy. And, of course, we're coming up on July 4th. Get your patriotic apparel now. It's 30% off this incredible wide selection we have of patriotic t-shirts, thealexjonesstore.com.
wonder if we have any of those patriotic t-shirts around. I really, really like the designs of the 250th anniversary year. A quarter of a millennia, this great country has tried desperately to fill its promise, to fulfill its promise of 1776 and a world ruled by the people and for the people. Wherever we fall short, we always have that North Star of the founding fathers and their foundational moral principles and political genius to guide us on our path and get us back on the right track. Go to thealexjonesstore.com to support us in this mission, support yourself, and get some fantastic apparel for the upcoming very special and unique Independence Day, the 250th of our country. Now I want to go to a video of Julian Dory, very popular podcaster these days. And this is what's going to have to happen now that we're done with the war of distraction in Iran. You remember the Epstein files had some very interesting notes where people said things like, well, if we're about to get caught, you know, the distraction I would do would be to start World War III or maybe bomb Iran. And I don't think it was necessarily a coincidence that very shortly after the release of the Epstein files, when the entire world and specifically the American population got access to a tranche of millions of documents that show in no uncertain terms and in no need for a heck of a lot of interpretation, a gigantic cabal of pedophiles that manipulate the rest of us in order to exploit and control us. And I think we need to get back to talking about that, okay? We had our fun with the Iran expedition. We lost a bunch of money and a bunch of bases and we're humiliated and now we're done with that. Okay, that's over. Thanks, guys. That was fun. Let's get back to the very concerning reality of everybody in power in our country being in hawk to or blackmailed by a bunch of Israeli spies that have them on film doing horrible things with children. Can we get back to that? Because that's a big deal that we haven't dealt with yet. Julian Dory is leading the charge on this. Let's go now to this clip. Bombshell Epstein Trump report proves cover up. Let's watch.
Vice President Pierre panicked, as I said, to others in the room about the way the subject Epstein was already dividing the MAGA coalition. Some senior officials had the impression This is one of the best sentences in the whole article.
100%.
Some senior officials had the impression that Vance had bought into the darkest theories about Epstein and a cabal of predators hidden within the country's ruling class, which, guess what? There are none of them. In fact, every bit of these files has proven that there is not one pedophile that exists in this country, let alone in the elite classes, who would never, ever do such a thing as harm an innocent child. I mean, Deef, we've gone through jmail.world. They're never talking about anything that could possibly be a reduction in the life of any kid or any person who's trafficked whatsoever, because they're above that. Why would they do that ever in this world? Why would these darkest theories ever would buy into? I don't know. Maybe.
I think that needs to be about our attitude. That's about what we need to have. Hopefully we dump that. I mean, it is crazy. It is genuinely insane. And you know, the interesting part about the Epstein files was that, and I don't know if people appreciate this really, it is like the ultimate success of the founder's vision, right? Because this is an international scandal. It involves, you know, infiltration and subversion in our country, not just the obviously despicable crimes of child abuse and child endangerment that is very much on display. The not, again, very subtle references to torture and murder and all of this sort of stuff. It is horrific. And the executive branch was keeping it hidden. The executive branch, whose obligation it is and was to bring justice for these crimes and to expose this stuff, to be the long arm of the law for the American people, failed to do so. And so what happens? The other branch of the government institutes its checks and balances capability. Like this is what it's supposed to be. We're not supposed to have a government that just
ignores the will of the people, and every branch of the government seems to kind of work in tandem. The Congress doesn't really want the responsibilities. They're happy to shuffle it off to the executive branch. The executive branch kind of does whatever the hell it's want. In this case, you have the executive branch not fulfilling its obligations and instead having to get the Congress to force their hand in a bipartisan fashion. This is like the ultimate proof that our system is still valuable and viable when you have the right people in office. And of course, that's why they kicked Thomas Massie out of Congress, thanks to AIPAC, or as Jonathan Potteritz put it, he ran into the buzzsaw of AIPAC and basically Israeli opposition as a warning to everybody else what happens when you dare try to fulfill the demands of the people you actually represent. Really incredible stuff. Let's go back to Julian Dory and his friend being very correct about how we should all feel about Jeffrey Epstein and the cover-up.
Citizens who are asleep at the wheel. Some senior officials had the impression that Vance had bought into the darkest theories about Epstein and a cabal of predators hidden within the country's ruling class. The second best sentence is what comes next. Wiles would tell others that the vice president had proved himself to be a major conspiracy theorist. Oh my God, he thinks that bad things happen and that would never happen in the United States of America. Susie Wiles, who also advised for a short time on Benjamin Netanyahu's 2020 re-election campaign. And obviously his files don't involve Israel or, you know, anything like that at all. So, you know, she would never be obfuscating because of that. But can we actually look up the term conspiracy, Deef? Let's start there. I'm going to do a little drill here. I haven't thought about
this. Let's do a drill.
Let's see if this helps me with what I'm thinking in my head. A conspiracy is a secret plan or agreement between two or more people to commit an illegal, harmful, or subversive act such as fraud, treason, or corruption. In both the Merriam-Webster Dictionary and the Legal Information Institute at Cornell Law School, so it's Ivy League approved, it is formally defined as an agreement along with an intent to achieve the unlawful goal, often requiring an overt act in furtherance of the plot. So, fair to say that means some level of secrecy to obfuscate something illegal.
I feel like that stuff happens, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Bernie Madoff, just stuff.
Yeah, it's gone.
People conspire.
Yes. Yeah. It's all gone.
Yeah.
It's like, where's the South Park scene? Where's my money? And it's gone. It's all gone. Now can we look up conspiracy theory definition? A conspiracy theory is an explanation of an event or situation that cites a covert, often sinister group of powerful people working in secret to achieve a malevolent goal. These theories typically reject the mainstream official consensus because they're the mainstream official consensus.
Because they're on the payroll.
Listen, but Deef, whether they're on the payroll or not, the money doesn't matter.
No.
They're always right.
They've
never missed.
They are. That's why we listen to them.
It is. I mean, there's something about the chief of staff of the White House calling the vice president a conspiracy theorist for accurately interpreting the official government files about official government investigations into a giant conspiracy. What are we doing here? What are we doing here, folks? And I don't know. You know, I don't like to be a sucker, but it does seem to me like J.D. Vance is on the right side of all of this stuff. And I'm like, is he so deep undercover that this is all a big game? Because, you know, people, you follow his history, you learn about sort of who paved his way to the position that he's in now. But I have a hard time not believing that he's who he says he is when routinely on every one of these issues, he seems to be, in some cases, the only person in any position of power actually expressing what we all can all see, that the Jeffrey Epstein pedophile cabal network was obviously a conspiracy in the classic definition, that Israel, you know, killing everybody in Lebanon is not a positive by any means. He seems like the real deal, which is why I think he's being shuffled off to the side and the Hegseth Rubio ticket is being pushed forward because they're a little bit more dedicated to the people who actually hand out positions in the highest halls of our government. We'll be back on the other side with our final segment. Don't go anywhere, folks.
AlexJonesLive.com. Share that link to all your friends.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are listener and viewer supported. It's very simple at thealexjonesstore.com. You back us. You fund us. You are everything. And we bring you the very best products, the very best supplements, the very best water filtration systems, the widest selection of Patriot apparel, the very best knives, silver coins, you name it, so that you get a great product and empower yourself while at the same time empowering yourself and free humanity against the globalists. So, a lot of new things at thealexjonesstore.com. Look at these belts. They are super comfortable. They are incredible high quality. They are so durable. They'll last a lifetime. And the way they're designed is something special. So I paid like $75 a year or so ago for a similar belt. And I told Bigley, I like this type of belt. Why don't you get these? They got belts even better than the one I bought about a year ago that I love. And they're selling them for $39 right now. That is a big discount out of the gates at thealexjonesstore.com. Premium nylon tactical belt. This is the premium nylon tactical belt available now at thealexjonesstore.com for only $39.99. It's built from heavy-duty nylon webbing with a smooth automatic ratchet buckle. No holes, no guessing, no too tight or too loose. You get a perfect micro-adjustable fit whether you're working, carrying, driving, sitting at your desk, or on the move. And we've got them in three editions. On the buckle is a little cross, a 1776 edition, and Alex Jones signature edition, making it original and special. It's all black, tactical, clean, durable, and built for everyday use. It's murdered out. It's off black. And right now it's only $39 at thealexjonesstore.com. They are premium. They look great. They have knocked it out of the park with this product. Get yours today and also buy gifts for friends and family and know you're funding the tip of the spear in the fight against tyranny. Also, Bigley knocked it out. Highest rating level with the carbon filters, beautiful, highest grade stainless steel for lower price than other systems that aren't even as good. We're so proud of this. The first group sold out. More coming in about a week and a half. So get your order in now to make sure it's ahead of the line. Those are now available. This is platinum level, gravity fed, water filtration, and it makes this operation possible, multi-tested by top companies to take out hundreds and hundreds of bad chemicals at non-detectable levels, the atrazine, the glyphosate, all of it. You should do this for your family. Do this for yourself. It's a big 3-gallon system. It's amazing. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And then we have the widest selection of Patriot apparel. Some of the designs are the best. Some of them are okay. I'll just be honest. Some of the designs I come up with are okay. But I came up with the concepts of these new shirts. Limited edition, 250th anniversary of America, July 4th, special edition. So it's sold through the middle of June, through July, and then we're not going to sell these T-shirts anymore. They look so good, they'll fuck with another variant or something. But these are limited edition, Liberty or Death, 1776, 2026. They came up with that. I love it. The simple one I came up with, America, 250 years strong, nice, simple, clean, kind of got like a polo look to it. Look at that one. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. Gadsden flag on the Betsy Ross flag. I came up with that design. I'm really proud of these. They're very clean. You'll meet a lot of like-minded people wearing these. Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition. I designed that bad boy. They designed the 1776, 250 years of freedom. Oh, I love the one they designed with the brass knuckles, 1776 free. Defund the deep state. That's all their designs. America, ride fast, live free. They designed that. Ball caps as well, all limited edition. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And to keep us on the air, take action now. Big Brother hates it when you fund the tip of the spear. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
The program leftists failed to silence. It's the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back. Final segment of the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Got a lot of videos to show you here in the final segment. And some of it's completely insane. I want to do this really quick because we haven't covered this in a while, but I've been watching the case develop, and it has been as unfair as one would expect. It's the case of Chud the Builder. Now, I actually have a personal relation to this case because Chud the Builder was supposed to be coming on War Room with us the day that he got in a fight and was arrested, rather was attacked, protected himself and was arrested. This whole thing has revealed a very obvious two-tier situation in our country. Again, I'm not going to go through all of Chud the Builder's background or anything else like that, but the way he's being treated, the way he is being denied upon, the way that they are using every manipulation they can in the legal process to punish him, not for the crime that he committed, if he committed one, even, I don't think he did, but, you know, this is not a matter of a dangerous person being kept away from society because, you know, in order to protect them, he's not a dangerous person. He was attacked. He defended himself. And by the way, he shot himself in the scuffle. Like, that alone, I would think, would mean that whatever happened was chaotic, was, like, clearly you don't shoot yourself with a gun if you're the one in control of a situation. It's not like he, you know, pulled the gun, just started shooting. He wasn't under threat. Like, the fact that, yeah, he shot somebody, but he also was shot, you would think that that would be like, all right, well, you know, clearly this was a chaotic moment of panic, whatever it is. But long story short, Chud the Builder gets a reputation for, well, if we really want to go back, the reason Chud the Builder even started doing what he was doing was because he had basically been attacked and smeared during Black Lives Matter, and for years had found that he was under constant harassment and couldn't get a job because, I don't know, he disagreed with Black Lives Matter at one point, so they decided to destroy his life, and they pretty much succeeded. So he said, well, if I'm going to be known as this guy, if you're going to destroy my life and try to make me, you know, completely broke and desperate because of who I am, then I'm just going to embrace it, and I'm going to flip it around, you know, to do a little judo flip of it and go, oh, you want to bankrupt me because I say the N-word? What if I become famous by saying the N-word? What if I say it even more? Because, hell, you want to destroy my life over saying it? I'm just going to keep saying it and see what happens. And, of course, he gets a reputation, and people want to fight him and kill him. People threaten him with guns all the time. And he's basically, you know, his point is it's just a word. And, you know, the reaction, the violent reaction, is completely outrageous and ridiculous and exposes like a very concerning undercurrent in our society of people who think that words justify violence and think that words are violence and think that saying a word, like, that's the craziest. It's not even a sentiment, right? It's not even a thought. It's just a word. In any context, you say that word and you deserve to die. In fact, if you say that word after being attacked, it somehow retroactively justifies the attack. We saw this legally. This has been the case with the guy in Portland who was stabbed. After he was stabbed, he called his attacker the N-word, and the jury in Oregon basically said, well, then it's fine, you were stabbed. They let the guy go. They didn't punish the stabber, the knifeman, because after stabbing somebody, he was called a no-no word. This is crazy. This is unacceptable. This is not the way that a conscious society operates. And the outrage and fear over this word that, by the way, is like the most popular word in the black culture, like, it's all so ridiculous and absurd. So he gets this reputation as being somebody who does not fear claims of racism. He is harassed pretty endlessly. This guy catches sight of him, the guy who attacked Chud the Builder and was subsequently shot, had posted on Facebook and other social media that he would try to find Chud and that if he ever found Chud, he would try to attack him. Chud the Builder is there streaming, not interacting with the guy. They call out Chud the Builder. He interacts with him momentarily, then tries to walk away. The guy follows him and attacks him. Chud the Builder, I guess, tries to pull out his gun while he's being attacked. The gun goes off. The guy gets shot. Chud the Builder gets hit. Again, I think that's an important part of this, is that Chud the Builder himself was shot with his own gun. Again, it's not, this wasn't an execution. This wasn't him just pulling his gun out and shooting. This was a physical attack. And by the way, if you have a gun, you know, I get that it's a little bit like cause and effect gets a little wonky when you get into this, but if you have a gun, you are now, like, the threat of physical assault against you is now a lot more intense, because that means that if somebody is coming at you to attack you, they know you have a gun, they're attacking you anyway. Okay, that's kind of concerning. And what happens if they get the gun? You know, it's like you can't let that happen. You can't just assume that they're going to, like, disarm you and leave you alone. If you have a gun, if they know you have a gun, they attack you anyway. Maybe they try to get your gun from you. Okay, you are now in a life and death struggle for which, you know, physical, you know, firing the gun is absolutely justified, in my opinion. So Chud didn't start the fight. In my opinion, the fact that he shot himself means he wasn't, you know, didn't deliberately shoot the guy. It sounds like the gun went off maybe in an unintended way. But regardless, he has been denied bond. They've gone through and, you know, because he got the money for his bond by, you know, fundraising, they wanted to disqualify that. Really no reason to do so. Meanwhile, the guy that attacked him in the first place isn't even being held. He's been let out and he's walking around, you know, free. Chud the Builder, however, has been in prison since the attack, will now remain in prison while he's being charged with attempted murder. Again, to me, this is a very simple matter of, if you're against Chud the Builder, you basically are saying that saying the N-word is worthy of a death sentence. Like, that's what the decision here. The question is, when an American says a word, do they deserve to die? And if your answer is yes, then you're against Chud the Builder. If your answer is no, this is America, okay, it's offensive, but that's the price you pay. Because that is the price you pay to think your own thoughts and to understand the truth and to have an unfiltered interaction with reality. You have to be offended. That's the trade-off, and it's a very small one. Hey, some people are going to say things you don't like. Bummer. Your feelings got hurt. Boo-hoo. You know what you get in exchange? The ability to think freely, the ability to express yourself in any way. It's incumbent. It's, you can't have one without the other. This is a matter of free speech. This is a matter of not, you know, whether it's okay to go do this. You can think whatever you want about that. You have a legal right to, and nobody has the right to kill you because they don't like what you say. That is what's at contest here with this Chud the Builder trial. And he has now had his bond revoked. His real name's Dalton Etherly. He was arrested after he allegedly walked out of a restaurant tab of nearly $400. Like, that story is also fake. Basically, he went to a restaurant and the restaurant kicked him out and he was like, but I haven't paid for my food. And they're like, it doesn't matter, get out of here. And then they later charge him and say that he, you know, left without paying, when literally they kicked him out because they didn't want him there. And then they charged him later. So this guy's just been, like, harassed endlessly. Again, why? Because he has said the N-word and he has white skin. He's a white guy. He's not allowed to say the N-word. Therefore, arrest him unfairly, get him fired from his job, make him lose custody of his children, like, destroy his life in any way that you can. And if, you know, he still persists, then kill him. And, like, that's the way he's being treated. And this is outrageous and ridiculous. And frankly, anybody that is counter-signaling this is wrong. And it really is as simple as that. Let's go to the video now. Chud the Builder in court yesterday. He's not looking quite as clean shaven. And again, he's been in there for a month at this point, despite the fact that the guy that actually started the attack in the first place is out there walking free and not charged with anything. Let's watch. It's the one you were just playing as B-roll. Chud the Builder has no bond and will be held for trial. By the way, Carmelo Anthony stabbed his classmate to death and got bond. So that's the other thing. Like, when you compare Carmelo Anthony to Chud the Builder, it just could not be more different. One guy shows up with a knife, is politely asked to leave, pulls a knife out, stabs somebody in the chest, killing them. He gets bond. He gets to use the money that he gets on, you know, fundraising. He gets to go graduate. Meanwhile, Chud the Builder, minding his own business, gets attacked, tries to defend himself. He is receiving none of the benefits
that an American citizen should otherwise enjoy. Let's watch what happens with Chud the Builder in court yesterday.
Happening now, the controversial online streamer known as Chud the Builder is making an appearance in a national courtroom. Dalton Etherly faces three misdemeanor charges stemming from a May incident at Bob's Steak and Chop House inside the Omni Hotel. Investigators say Etherly live streamed inside the restaurant after staff asked him not to, then refused to pay. Etherly also faces separate felony charges in Montgomery County for a shooting investigation. During Etherly's court appearance, one investigator on the stand recalled the shooting.
Shots were shown to be fired prior to them hitting the ground.
Shots are being shown to have been fired prior to that?
Yes.
And how do we know that?
I can see, or in this courthouse video, it shows the casing ejecting from the firearm. It also shows the ricochet off the concrete planter.
Okay.
Prior to them hitting the ground.
So Mr. Fox hadn't been hit at that point, correct? If it, you're seeing a ricochet in one casing.
I would assume so.
The judge denied Etherly's release today, citing violent posts he's made on social media. Etherly is also facing a $1 million bond in the Montgomery County case.
So again, you know, we're going to keep an eye on this, and I'll try to bring somebody on who has covered this more and can tell you the actual details about how systematically they have denied Chud the Builder the rights that are provided to anybody else. And this is one of those things that just sort of happens in this country. It's like we were talking about earlier when it comes to, you know, these laws that we have that are very rigid and, you know, structured and been in place for 100 years about whether the president is able to declare war or not. And it's just like, well, but, you know, we like it, so it's just going to happen and that's fine. It's the same with rights as well in this country where it's like, yeah, you have an absolute right to, you know, free and fair trial and no, you know, extraordinary punishments to be leveled at you. But actually, you're an anti-Semite, so all that's out the window. Actually, you don't get any of the protections of the Bill of Rights, let alone any of the other amendments or freedoms guaranteed to you by the U.S. Constitution. See, that's only if you say what we want you to. If you disagree with us, you don't deserve any of that. It's that sort of mindset that, frankly, you see dominating these days. And I haven't covered this story much, but it was an absolutely fascinating one that happened while I was on vacation. It's the Cornell student who said he didn't want to work for Jews, and subsequently they tried to destroy his life for daring not to work for Jewish people. It's like, well, if you wanted to work for him before, I don't know if trying to destroy his life for disagreeing with him is the best way to convince people what a great working environment it would be. This is the story from Daily Mail, because of course he's the bad guy. He's got to be the bad guy. Entitled Cornell student who said he's not interested in working for a Jew is given $11,000 from supporters who blame Jewish people for trying to ruin his career. Well, they very much did try to ruin his career. That's the thing. It's like, okay, if you think it's fine they tried to ruin his career, then say that. But to act like they didn't is a lie. It's like, no, they tried to ruin his life. They still are. By the way, it's not just Jews doing it. It's people like Leo Terrell as well, which is how I'm going to connect this all together. But his name is Austin Franco, 19, sparked a fierce debate on social media after he turned down an interview at a tech startup over the founder's Jewish faith. Gabe Einhorn, the 24-year-old chief executive of Verified, an anti-fraud platform, jumped on X to share a message he received from Franco on the college career platform Handshake. He included a screenshot of Franco's comments, which read, "Not interested in working for a Jew, thanks." Yet, after receiving mountains of backlash over his comments, supporters began appearing and rallying behind the Ivy League student. See, this is telling the story in kind of a convoluted way. What actually happened was apparently this guy, Austin Franco, was approached multiple times by this Gabe Einhorn fellow and asked to interview for a job. Austin was not interested and said he didn't want to work for a Jewish person. Maybe not the smartest thing to say, but who cares? It's the truth, right? And again, I just don't understand. If I was trying to hire somebody and they were like, I don't want to work for a white person, or I don't want to work for a Christian, I'd be like, okay, bye. You know, great. Glad you told me now rather than, you know, concealed that and, you know, start working for me and screwed everything up. You know, who would want to hire somebody that wouldn't want to work for you or your religion or whatever else. And this is not a like hard and fast, you know, principled belief held by Gabe Einhorn or John Lonsdale or anything like that. Because in the same thread where Gabe Einhorn is talking about Austin not wanting to work for Jews, there's people going, hey, my child wants to work for a Jew. Can you give him a job? And Einhorn's like, absolutely. Give me a call. Right? It's not like, well, how dare you? You have to go work for a white person or a Muslim. You have to go work for a Christian or a Muslim. How dare you have preferences over the ethnicity of the people for whom you are employed? It's not a hard and fast, like, principle they have. It's a ethnic supremacy kind of motivation that's behind it. Because what happened was, and this, the reason I think, there's a couple things I think are interesting about this. For one of them, it is the way in which people are lying about it now. In fact, I posted something about this and I had people commenting on my post saying I was lying, saying, actually this never happened. They said Gabe Einhorn never doxed, never revealed the identity of this Austin Franco person, but he absolutely did. And it's not even a question. In fact, the post is still up. So Gabe Einhorn publishes this person's name, then edits the tweet that has his name in. But when you edit a tweet, you can always go back and see the older version. So that older version where he names Austin Franco is still up. You just have to click the, you know, see all edits part. But what happened here was Joe Lonsdale, let's see, how do I tell it? Hopefully you've already heard this story, so I'm just sort of giving you a recount. But if you hadn't heard it before, Gabe Einhorn first puts out a tweet that hides Austin Franco's name. And it says, and basically he's publishing it saying, hey, it's really concerning how sort of brazen this Cornell student is being, saying, I don't want to work for a Jew. Basically saying, I just want to let everybody know that, like, this guy's from Cornell, this is like one of our higher institutions of learning, and this is the way he's talking, and, you know, maybe that's not good for the direction that our society is going. That's how I interpreted his original post. And then Joe Lonsdale basically says, say who he is. Say this person's name. Let's ruin his life. And Gabe Einhorn actually responds like, well, I don't want to ruin this guy's life. I just think people need to know about what's going on. To which Joe Lonsdale responds, no, Gabe, you are being weak. If somebody does this, they deserve consequences. The only way a people prevail is through strength. Be a strong Jew. Don't be one of the weaklings that reacts in a way to get us attacked more. Be a man that makes them afraid to attack your people. And then he publishes the actual LinkedIn profile of Austin Franco with his name and picture, doxing him. Now, Joe Lonsdale is one of the PayPal Mafia members who is actually a co-founder of Palantir, which again is very concerning that this is the mindset of the people that run Palantir. It's the same mindset as Alex Karp as well. This idea. Now, he's not, you know, he's saying our people, he's saying, you know, be a strong Jew, make them afraid to attack your people, our people, right? This is how they think. I mean, this is their mindset. And it's not, you know, they don't feel this way about white people, Christians, or Americans, specifically Jews. But again, the interesting thing about this is that Gabe Einhorn's first instinct was not to destroy this guy's life. It wasn't, you know, to wreak vengeance and to, you know, punish him severely for this act of thought crime. It was the hyper elite Jew, the billionaire Jewish guy who came in and said, actually, no, you do need to punish this guy, wielding, you know, the pressure that comes along with his name to get Gabe Einhorn to go, oh yeah, you know, you're right. I really do need to destroy this guy's life. So it's not even like, you know, this Gabe Einhorn guy understood, you know, by nature, like, okay, we're going to destroy this guy. He had to be convinced. He had to be told to do this. Joe Lonsdale had to step in and remind him of his duty to the Jewish people. That's the poison that comes from people like Joe Lonsdale, who are this extremist, do think that you deserve to have your life destroyed if you don't want to work for him, I guess. And the pressure that he wielded. But then
where it really gets actually disturbing is that a DOJ official, Leo Terrell, came out and said he wanted to make Austin Franco permanently unhirable for merely saying he didn't want to work for a Jewish person. So Leo Terrell, in his official position as a member of the DOJ, puts out a tweet that says, if this Jew hater is ever hired, please post me and I will retweet it. So as far as I'm concerned, this is a official of the U.S. government using his position in the U.S. government, using the power of the U.S. government to levy a punishment on somebody for a thought crime. Leveling a punishment on somebody, and punishment, you can, sure, you can be sent to jail, but you can, you have lots of punishments that are available in criminal or civil processes. How many constitutional rights do you think are being violated by Leo Terrell by posting this? Seems like a cruel and unusual punishment. He never gave the other guy a chance to defend himself. There was no actual accusation that could be met with a denial or a guilty plea. There was never a point in which he, you know, the Austin guy was allowed to say his point. They skipped all of that. So no due process, obviously, but the punishment is still being leveled from the American government in a way that I would consider cruel and unusual and an obvious violation of the First Amendment that says you're allowed to have a religion or a religious preference. That is literally the point of the First Amendment. And if we want to get rid of that, well, things might get a little uncomfortable really fast. But as it exists now, we essentially have Judaism as the state religion. And if you dare to blaspheme against that state religion, the government itself will punish you for it. I think he's got a pretty good civil rights case on his hands. If only he can find a lawyer. If only he could find a lawyer. Ask Laura Loomer how easy that'll be. So again, it's crazy. It is genuinely crazy that people like Joe Lonsdale or Gabe Einhorn are pursuing this tack of make them afraid of us. Make them afraid of us. It's especially interesting that that's the tack they take because they pretty much immediately started crying victim. And you had Gabe Einhorn complaining that, you know, some other guy, I think his name's Mo Khan or something. But he basically came out and was like, all right, they want to destroy, you know, this guy's life. Two can play at that game. Let's all go give bad reviews to Gabe Einhorn's business. And oh, now they're doxing Austin Franco's family and they're, you know, going after his parents and their business. All right, let's go after Gabe Einhorn's parents' business. Let's do that. And obviously, I would prefer if we didn't get into a tit-for-tat ethnic conflict between Muslims and Jews, both trying to destroy each other's, you know, public life over words. I would prefer not to have any of this intersect with American society whatsoever. But you don't get to play the victim all of a sudden. If you think that somebody's words are worth destroying their life, well, you can't turn around and then go, oh my gosh, we're being attacked. This is anti-Semitic. They're trying to target us because we're Jews. It's like, well, maybe you should have left him alone. Maybe Joe Lonsdale shouldn't have swept in and said, actually, we do need to destroy this person's life. By the way, co-founder of Palantir, operators of identity programs, you probably don't want these types of people with control of your personal information. They seem vindictive and extremist.
It took them 2 years to do it. When Bigley came on as our sponsor, now the owner of the Alex Jones Network and then the main backer, I said, I want gravity-fed filters. I sent them the test from previous sponsors, and I said, these guys fell off. Their quality wasn't as good. I got rid of them. This happens to these companies. There's only out of more than 50 gravity-fed companies, 3 or 4 that have the very best filters that cut everything out. They're stainless steel, and they start cutting the quality for whatever reason. I said, I want the highest-rated stainless steel. I want a clone of these products, but even better, and I want filters rated this high or higher. They went out, took them 2 years, they did it. This is something everybody needs, everybody wants. There's a giant market of folks that know how wonderful gravity-fed filters are and know what quality is. We have all the tests published on the site. It's the best. There are companies selling filters that the stainless steel isn't as nice, anywhere close. and the filters aren't even the highest rated. They're selling the damn things for $400. They're selling units similar to ours, aren't even as good, for $500 retail, discounting at $400. These babies are $300 and even lower for VIP members. There is very small markup. The markup is not even 100% in these, okay? And when you're VIP, it's even lower. That is the best deal. This is a home run. This is the best. This is going to help hire new crew on top of the crew, extra crew. It's going to help get new reporters and hosts and the new network getting complete with all the equipment stuff. I mean, this is a big investment here. We're rebuilding our operations. We can't do it without you. So your word of mouth for the show, AlexJonesLive.com, getting the free app, sharing that with others where they can get it, AlexJonesApp.com. Following us on Exit Real Alex Jones, following us on Rumble at rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. That's all critical in telling others to do that. Your word of mouth, your prayer is king, but getting these products is also critical. And we only sell you stuff that really empowers you because we want you to love it and be impressed with it so we have a relationship with you.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.